This product sucks. The WWE sucks. And Vince Russo is here to save the day once again.
Mr. Trouble never hangs around when he hears this mighty sound.
Here I come to save the day.
That means that
Vince Russo
is on the way. Yes, sir, when there is a wrong to right,
Vince Russo
will join the fight. On the seat or on the land, he gets the situation well in hand.
So though we are in danger, we never despair, cause we know that where there's
Swerve,
he is there.
He is there, on the land, on the sea, in the air. We're not worrying at all, we're just listening for his
bullshit.
Here I come to save the day.
That means that
Vince Russo
is on the way. Just listening for his
bullshit.
Here I come to save the day.
That means that
Vince Russo
is on the way.
Are you gonna be kidding me?
Oh shit!
It's Vince Russo!
Down the tidy bowl, quite possibly, goes another wrestling company. Vince Russo has to be involved in the story. The more I think about this story, the more incomprehensible the whole thing is to me. It's a week later since the story broke, and I still can't fathom what the hell's going on. This is episode 339 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Saturday, August 2nd, 2014. I am the Solid Monster. Very newsworthy week in wrestling, both for WWE and for TNA, and we're going to get into all that stuff in a second. Just want to remind everybody listening that you can download or stream the podcast each and every week on thesolidmonster.com. You can do so also in iTunes, Stitcher Radio, both of which you can subscribe to our show there, leave a review, and also you can listen to us on TuneIn Radio, which we were just added to a couple of weeks ago, so you can support us on there and follow our page on TuneIn. Also want to give shout-outs to people who have donated to the podcast via PayPal this week. You can do so on thesolidmonster.com. Right-hand side, you will see the PayPal box. Big ups to Nick Ingracia. You can also check out his YouTube channel, by the way, Jake McCoy Network on YouTube. It's actually pretty funny. The Wrestler, Albert Morris, Ryan the Dagger McTaggart, Derek Kiss of Death Kenny, Andrew the Maskman Maskell, Dennis Can't Stop Me Now, Cats, and Bustin' Justin Dolan. Thank you guys very much for your donations and your support of the podcast this week. You can also sign up for a free Audible trial. Free for 30 days, you get one free audio book. We had a lot of signups last month, so I thank you for that. We have now begun anew here for the month of August, and you can sign up for your free trial using our custom URL, audibletrial.com/solidmonster is the place to go for that. I had an interesting week where I auditioned for a game show on Wednesday, and it was an interesting experience. I will share that with you guys at the end of the show. I'll save that for the end, because we got to talk about this whole TNA Vince Russo Spike TV debacle here to open the podcast. We're going to start with TNA this week, and we'll get to Impact later on, but remind me to never have Vince Russo send emails for me, I think would be the first point to make here. It's just unbelievable how this whole thing unraveled since what I talked about last week, where Vince Russo, for those of you who don't know, quote, accidentally, unquote, sent an email that was intended for Taz and Mike Tenay to Mike Johnson of PWInsider.com. So perhaps the word Mike came up in his autocomplete. He sent it to the wrong Mike. Who knows exactly what happened, whether there was malice or intent. There are apparently, according to certain reports, some people in TNA who feel it was done on purpose. Who knows? But an email was sent that should not have been sent to Mike Johnson, who then went public and said, look, This is proof that Vince Russo, who has denied it, is in fact still working in some capacity for TNA, and it just kind of unraveled from there. Russo went on Twitter. Not only did he deny the whole thing, but he basically bashed Mike Johnson and PW Insider and questioned their reputation, dragged their name through the mud. You know, it's one thing if TNA really didn't want that to come out and they told Russo, listen, you gotta deny this. You've got to just deny. It's one thing to say, okay, fine. My employer told me to deny, so that's what I'm going to go do. He went far beyond that. Okay, he went far beyond that, and that was a really scumbag move on his part. And, you know, Mike Johnson said, listen, you could come clean, or I could provide the email as evidence, then people can see it for themselves and make up their own minds. And that's when Russo then came clean. He apologized. Then he took down the apology. He admitted that he is, in fact, still working for TNA, although now he isn't. Supposedly, my head hurts. But here's what we know. Here's what I can deduce from all of this news that has come out. And I'm actually happy that I didn't go ahead and do a sound-off extra on YouTube or anything like that the day after, because I knew as the week wore on, we would find out more. I wanted to have a clearer picture of what's going on. It's still not that clear, but TMZ ran a story last Sunday, so this was only a few hours after last week's show was recorded and uploaded. TMZ ran a story Sunday night saying that Spike TV canceled Impact Wrestling. Cancel was the word that they used. I think the more appropriate term would be not renewed or will not renew. Had they canceled it, I don't think Impact would be airing anymore, any of the episodes that have already been taped. That's not the case. Impact is still airing. In fact, there's more tapings in New York City coming up this week. I'll be at one of them. So I don't know that it would be entirely appropriate to say that Spike has canceled Impact. It would be more accurate probably to say that they have not renewed, or they have opted not to renew TNA Impact. And it seems as though the whole Vince Russo fiasco last week now takes on a whole new meaning, because that was the straw that broke the camel's back with Spike TV. Spike, for whatever reason, does not like Vince Russo, and TNA apparently had assured them that he was no longer working for the company. And when this whole thing came out, Spike, as you would expect, not very happy about that. Not very happy that Russo was still in the fold, and not very happy that they had been lied to by TNA. And so when the story on TMZ broke, you had denials from everybody at TNA. Dixie Carter went on Twitter. She denied the story. Others in TNA denied it. Viacom, the parent company of Spike TV, gave a statement saying that they cannot comment on ongoing negotiations, which would seem to indicate that perhaps there are still negotiations ongoing between TNA and Spike TV. It sounds like TMZ may have jumped the gun on the story. And TMZ, you know, say what you want to about TMZ. It's kind of like the National Enquirer. It's this trashy tabloid and all that kind of stuff. TMZ has broken plenty of legitimate news stories before, and before anybody else. And so is the National Enquirer. So say what you want to about them. You can't say that they're an illegitimate source of news. If anything, I think I find them more legitimate than most mainstream news sources. So it made sense that people would take the story and run with it. It just seems like whoever fed that information to TMZ may have jumped the gun. Maybe they had their own ulterior motive for doing so. Who knows? We don't know where they got the information from. They claim they had multiple sources. You know, multiple being the key word. That seems to indicate it wasn't just one person who went to them with the story. They heard it from multiple people that Spike is not renewing TNA. So we don't know for sure whether or not the story is 100% accurate or not. You know, are there still negotiations ongoing? According to TNA, there are. And according to TNA, they expect a new deal, hopefully to be hammered out shortly. That's their version of the story. Now, why, you know, Spike would not just come out and say outright that they have opted not to renew TNA, I don't know. Why they would be so nice and let TNA save face here, that really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So I'm hesitant to jump on that same bandwagon and say, well, that's the end of TNA. You know, Impact is done. They're not coming back to Spike. I had predicted a long time ago, my gut told me that they were going to stay on Spike. They were going to reach a new deal, even if it wasn't on the same terms they had now, if it was for less money or whatever. I just couldn't see Spike letting them go. So I figured they were going to sign a new deal, maybe for 1 to 2 years. You know, that was my prediction. I still feel like they're going to be renewed. I don't know. There's just something about this whole thing that just makes me feel like, in the end, they're going to come to some kind of agreement. It probably won't be a great agreement for TNA, but they'll come to some sort of agreement to keep Impact on Spike. I don't know. I just feel like it's not a done deal yet. It's not a done deal. I'm sure there is no agreement that's been reached. But I do think there probably are conversations that are still ongoing here. Otherwise, I don't see why you delay the inevitable. You know, I guess Spike can be nice, and this may have even been in the TMZ story, and they're going to give TNA a chance to go ahead and negotiate with other networks, and I'm sure they are. I'm sure TNA is negotiating with other networks. They contracted with UTA, that talent agency, to handle all of the negotiations. Dixie Carter apparently has nothing to do with it. It's all UTA. Their job is to help TNA find a new TV deal, whether it's with Spike or some other network. So I'm sure that is going on right now. But whatever's going on, it's not a done deal. TNA was hoping to make some sort of announcement about it, one way or the other, to the wrestlers at the tapings in New York City coming up this week. Maybe they will. Maybe they'll pull a rabbit out of their ass at the 11th hour. You know, I'll be at the tapings on Tuesday, by the way. I'm looking forward to that a lot. But, you know, let's say they don't renew, and Spike really has already made up its mind to cut ties with TNA. That would be awfully grim news for the future of TNA wrestling. You know, and it's not that it would be impossible for them to find another TV outlet. I have no idea what that would be. You know, it's that their core source of revenue. Okay, this is what makes it so grim. Their core source of revenue comes from Spike. Now even still, they've been forced to make cuts. Okay, they've made some big cuts in TNA. We talk about WWE cuts, which we're going to get into. You know, they've let some big names go in just the last 6 months. They've been late on payments for some of their employees. Many months ago, the production crew almost staged a walkout a few months back when they weren't paid and Dixie had to cut them checks on the spot just to keep them working. Okay, and that's with Spike money. You take away Spike money, or even if they re-sign with Spike, but for less money, what kind of future does that company really have? It's not good. It's not good. And if they do leave Spike, keep in mind, WWE, which is far bigger, far more successful than TNA, had to settle for less money because when they shopped around, nobody was interested. Nobody was willing to pay for pro wrestling. Same thing when WWE left Spike. They went limping back to USA Network because nobody else was willing to give them the kind of deal that they were looking for. And that was in 2005. Look at Main Event. Main Event on ION Television got canceled. So they moved it to the WWE Network. That show did better ratings than Impact. It definitely did better than most of the other shows on ION, I can tell you that. And they canceled it. NXT, they tried to get NXT on cable. Nobody wanted it. Legends House, they shopped it around. Nobody wanted it. So it ended up finally on the network 2 years after they taped the damn thing. It's not exactly a booming market for wrestling out there right now. You would think there would be. You know, TNA still somehow, by the grace of God, brings in over 1 million viewers every single week, despite all of the hours of horrendous television that they brought us before the show suddenly stopped sucking last month. That's still a big audience. That's still 1.1, 1.4 million people. But their options are limited. I can't see Impact becoming a YouTube show, for example, and surviving. People have said, well, what about Fox Sports Net? That's where they started. The thing people don't realize is when they were on Fox Sports Net, they were paying Fox. You know, it's not unlike what WWE did back in the day with syndicated shows, Superstars, Challenge, where they would pay stations to run the programming for them. It's not like TNA was getting all this money from Fox Sports Net. Yeah, maybe they can go back to Fox Sports. I don't give them 3 months if that happens. But the Russo angle to this story is just mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling that after all the shit with him and WCW in 2000, that here we are in 2014, and he's at the center of another shitstorm that could end up bringing down another wrestling company. You know, Taz, during the week, tweeted, he said, I unfollowed Russo earlier. He's annoying and all about his brand. Hashtag go away. You know you're so well-liked when the people that you work with call you annoying and tell you to go away. Now, I don't know if that's Taz legitimately feeling annoyed by this guy, And the fact that he's at the center of all this, and this could jeopardize his job and all the friends and people that he works with in that company. Maybe he legitimately resents Russo for it. Or maybe that's TNA telling Taz and other people, listen, we got to distance ourselves from this guy. So go on Twitter, name drop him, say that you unfollowed him, you want nothing to do with him. You know, when I hear these things and I see these things, I'm always cynical about it. You know, is it a work? Is it legit? You know, they blur the lines. You never really know what's real and what's not. But, you know, that's what Taz tweeted. Apparently that's how he really feels, and I'm sure he's not the only one. Then on Wednesday, Vince Russo went on Twitter. He posted, officially done with TNA. Today they suggested a break. I declined. Finality was better for me. And sure enough, PW Insider, Wrestling Observer, right? They each reported, after he tweeted that according to their sources in TNA, Russo was in fact fired. He was not given the option to stay. It was not his choice to end the relationship, as he would have people believe. Vince Russo, full of shit until the bitter end. John Gaborik made the phone call to Russo, cutting him loose. You know what, though? If I'm Spike TV, I don't buy for a second that Russo is gone. TNA has lied about this before. So who's to say they're not lying about it now? Why would I believe a word that these people have to say? If their lips are moving, I assume they must be lying. They lied to their TV partner. How can you do business with somebody that you don't trust? People keep asking me, like, why doesn't Spike TV like Vince Russo? What did Russo do to make Spike not like him? Hello? Have you never seen an episode of Impact? Especially from before 2012? What more evidence do you need? I don't know exactly what the issue is, but I can come to my own conclusions and probably not be too far off. Seriously, I'm at a loss. Why Dixie Carter would jeopardize her entire company knowing that Spike doesn't like the guy, knowing that Wrestle One, okay, all those guys in Japan don't like the guy, they think he's a racist, and lie and feel the need to hide it from the world, this undying loyalty for this guy, is one of the greatest mysteries to me in the history of wrestling. Maybe Dixie had a sex change many years ago and used to be Dick instead of Dixie, and Russo's got proof in a lockbox on a pole in his house somewhere. I don't know. I can't explain it. If you feel you have no choice but to lie to your partners, okay, and lie to your own talent, who, when they were asked, were told, no, Vince Russo is not working for us again. If you feel you have to keep this guy's employment so top secret, maybe that's a sign you shouldn't be doing business with him in the first place. I mean, I'll repeat the same thing I wrote on Facebook and Twitter when the story first broke, the TMZ thing last Sunday. Everybody in the world was commenting on it. And my comments were very simple. TNA has had 12 years to right the ship, and they haven't been able to do so. 12 years. ECW never even made it that long. They squandered an opportunity that most wrestling promoters would die for. They would kill for 2 hours in prime time on a major cable network. They have nobody to blame but themselves. I can't even fault Russo for it, ultimately. You know, if the ship goes down, who hired him? And then rehired him. It's their own damn fault. It's their own ineptitude. These people are inept. And it's the wrestlers and their families that are going to suffer the most from this if TNA goes down the tubes, and that's the saddest part of all. And for all you people who keep saying, oh, they're not going to suffer, they'll be fine, look at AJ Styles. He's making good money on the indies. Yeah, okay, Samoa Joe might make good money on the indies, Austin Aries might make good money on the indies, Bobby Roode, maybe. But you think most of the guys on that roster are going to make that kind of scratch? Really? AJ's pulling money in from Ring of Honor and from New Japan. Okay, he's double dipping. ROH doesn't have very many spots open. If TNA goes down, maybe they grab two or three guys. Davey Richards didn't exactly end things on the best of terms with ROH, so he's probably fucked. Same with Kenny King, I would think. So, you know, Jeff Jarrett's promotion? They still haven't announced a TV deal yet. They haven't announced shit. They keep announcing these partnerships with these different promotions all over the world, and that's all well and good. why don't you announce what the next phase of this whole experiment is? Are you going to have a TV show? Is it going to be a reality show? Can you give us a ballpark figure? This is turning into like the WWE Network all over again when they first came out in 2012 and said, oh, the network is coming, and it didn't launch until 2014. You know, if TNA goes down and these guys suddenly don't have a company to work for, I don't think they can afford to wait another year or two for this thing to get going. So, I mean, who even knows if they'll end up with a TV deal? And if they do, what kind of network they're going to be on? They're not going to be on Spike. They're not going to be on USA or TBS. So, who the hell knows where they end up? And we've already seen WWE is not interested in very many TNA guys. They've got NXT stocked with talent. And now they've got Kenta. They've got Devitt. Steen is likely on his way in. You think they have the money to raid all the big TNA stars at a time that they're cutting $40 million from their budget between now and next year? I've got some bad news for you if you believe that. There will be no invasion angle. Forget the fact that WWE doesn't know how to do an invasion angle the right way. You know, TNA, it's not a big deal to them. TNA is not a big deal to WWE. TNA is not WCW. It's a poison brand. The tape library, I could see them wanting that. And they should absolutely go after that because it has value to the network. They should be looking for all the content they can find. And you've got guys like Sting, who's on his way in, Kurt Angle, Jeff Hardy, who have all had some great matches in TNA that could be included in DVDs and Hall of Fame packages if they get inducted into the Hall of Fame. But that's it. These guys aren't all going to WWE or Ring of Honor. And it's one thing if a couple of big names leave TNA, let's say, and there's a demand for them on the indies. AJ Styles is a great example of that. I still can't believe that TNA let that guy go. But they did. And AJ's a big name. So he hasn't really had to try very hard to find work on the indies. And again, now he's with ROH. He's with New Japan. He still takes other indie bookings. Okay, I think Bill Behrens represents him. He's always working every week, every weekend in Japan, in the States. He's doing very well for himself. But that was one guy who became available. If an entire company goes down in flames and everybody suddenly is looking for bookings, the demand isn't going to be there as much. So let's stop pretending that TNA guys would be on Easy Street if the company goes down. Some of them would be, most of them would not be. Now, could TNA survive as a separate entity, like NXT, let's say, on the WWE network? I've had people wondering about that. You know, should WWE consider it if TNA does go down, or if TNA were to come to them, or something like that happened? You know, just last week on the podcast, I was talking about trying to think of new ideas for WWE to make the network appealing and for more content, and one of the things that I suggested is kind of far out there, but not really, is working with ROH and New Japan, because they're going to be hurting in a few months when Ustream stops doing iPay-per-views. New Japan won't have any presence in the United States. Ring of Honor didn't have a lot of luck doing iPay-per-views before they hooked up with Ustream. It was a complete disaster for them. And I don't know if they're going to have another regular pay-per-view. They had one in June. I still don't know, you know, we don't know how well it did, if they're going to do another one. It's not so far-fetched to think that they could throw those guys a lifeline and maybe air a few select ROH or New Japan shows on the network. If they can come to an agreement where they can make money off it, okay, because they're trying to cut costs at every corner. If they can make money off it, then why the hell not? Why the hell wouldn't you at least have conversations about that? Okay, so I talked about that last week. Now, what about doing the same thing with TNA? I don't think it would work. I don't think it would be a good idea, just because, like I said before, TNA is a damaged brand. And it's one thing to throw a lifeline to ROH or New Japan and reach a deal that benefits both sides, okay, to have some live shows on the network. It's an entirely different thing to basically buy the company, if that's what they were to do, and run it as a separate brand, you know, that you then have to pay all of those guys. Otherwise, if you're just bringing in, let's say, a handful of talent, you can't fill 2 hours of Impact with six guys. You may as well just bring those guys to the main roster or bring them down to NXT. And if the idea, let's say, is for TNA to keep existing on its own as a standalone company, but let WWE air Impact on the network, again, I ask you, how does TNA support itself financially? You really think WWE is going to pay them 10 cents for the rights to that show? Without that TV money, they're dead. They're done. So the idea that the fall of TNA could come at the fingertips of Vince Russo accidentally sending an email to a wrestling writer, if it comes to that, okay, if that actually is what ends up happening here, it would truly be a fitting end for that company. I hope it's not. I'm all amped up to go to the New York City tapings on Tuesday. I'm going with Webmaster Mike and Brian Blade. I've always had fun live at TNA shows. The Impact shows the last 3 or 4 weeks have been good to very good. I thought the show this week was really good. It's nice to have something other than Raw to watch during the week. I don't want to see TNA go away. It makes me angry to think that if it does, it could be because of this bozo. But like I said before, if that's what happens, it's their own fault. You can't blame anybody but Dixie Carter and the people in charge of TNA. And the fact that they would even let it get to that point, it almost doesn't even feel real. WWE had a big week as well, business-wise, and it wasn't all good. Thursday, they announced the latest network subscriber number. Now, the key here is that they had 667,000 subscribers to the network as of the day after WrestleMania. So that would have been April 7th. They added 161,000 subscribers from then until the end of the second quarter, which is June 30th. But in that time, they lost 128,000 of those people. And how they did that is very bizarre, but apparently if you subscribe via PayPal, or I guess if even on a credit card, and let's say PayPal, for example, there was no money in the account, they couldn't withdraw any money, that counts as a lost subscriber. With credit cards, I'm not quite sure how it works. Maybe if you have an expired card on file and it wasn't valid, same thing, counts as a lost subscriber. Because all those people who signed up back around that time in the spring, you know, they had a six-month commitment. So technically, that six-month renewal period has not yet come up. So when you see that number, how they lost 128,000, it sounds very bizarre. But even George Barrios on the investors call basically said, you know, if we tried to pull money and the money wasn't there, that counts technically as a lost subscriber. So they gained 161, they lost 128. The net difference there is 33,000, which makes the magic number 700,000 subscribers as of June 30th, which was the end of the second quarter. That's key because people within WWE who have contacted The Observer, the actual current number of subscribers, according to them, as of today, as of right now, is actually 690,000. Which would mean they actually lost another 10,000 people over the last 30 days or so. Even if we go with the 700,000 number as the current number, that's awful. That's a terrible sign of growth, almost no growth, nowhere close to what they had been hoping for. Now, as we'll get into in a second here, with all the cutbacks that they're doing, they're in a position to possibly make money on this network as early as next year with these current numbers. Believe it or not. So when you look at it like that, it's not as bad, but that's still a terrible number. They announced a whole bunch of other things here that helped prop up the stock. The stock did end up going back down, but on Thursday, the stock actually went up for a while. I think it went up over 10%. They also announced the worldwide rollout of the network is going to be taking place on August 12th, so less than 2 weeks away. SummerSlam will be available to the entire world on the network. From the press release they sent out, they said that they plan to make the U.S. version of the network available on that date over 170 countries and territories, including Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, Singapore, Mexico, Spain, and the Nordics. The network is going to be live in the U.K. in October, so you guys have to wait a little bit longer. I'm sure that makes you very happy. There's also plans for the network in Italy, Germany, Japan, India, China, Thailand, Malaysia. We don't have a date for those countries yet. Probably won't be until next year. WWE is also shaking up their price points for the network. $9.99 a month in this country. If you commit for 6 months, that's not changing. Although I would be stunned if a year from now that $9.99 was still the same. I still feel like at some point they're going to jack it up. And probably should jack it up to, let's say, $11.99. But you can still subscribe for that amount of money for 6 months. Those of you who do not want to commit, if you are a commitment phobe, you can buy the network month to month for $19.99. And to me, if you're the kind of person who doesn't care really about the pay-per-views, then it absolutely doesn't make any sense at all for you to subscribe month to month for $20. Just buy the 6-month subscription for $9.99. You're saving money. Now, if you care about the pay-per-views, then yes, it makes sense. Because essentially, if you only care about SummerSlam, let's say this price point kicks in, you can subscribe to the network for $19.99, watch SummerSlam, and then not subscribe the next month. So basically, you're getting SummerSlam for $20. That's less than the pay-per-views used to be back in the day. They used to be $24.95, and then they were $29.99. The in-your-house pay-per-views were shorter. Those were, I think, $15 back in the day, but they were also 2 hours. So for those people, yes, it makes sense. Otherwise, you may as well just subscribe for the 6 months. They're launching the network on smart TVs and Blu-ray players in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Some smart TVs, I don't think all of them. Canadian fans, getting a lot of tweets and emails from some of our Canadian listeners who still have no idea what's going on. WWE announced a long-term content deal, long-term as in 10 years, so they're locked in there, with Rogers Cable up in Canada, which, from what you guys have told me, not many fans of Rogers up there. That includes bringing the network to Rogers as a premium cable channel, so think of it similar to what HBO is here in this country. Someone called up Rogers the other day and asked them about it. They were told that they're offering the network for $11.99 per month. So, there you go. If you don't have Rogers and you do live in Canada, they are supposedly going to be offering the network to other providers. I assume the other providers probably don't play nice with Rogers. If the cable companies up there behave the same way the cable companies down here do, it's entirely possible that some will get shut out, but that's what they said. According to them, Rogers will offer the service to you even if you don't subscribe to Rogers, if you're with a different provider. Supposedly, you will have the opportunity still to subscribe to the network. Of course, that's what they say. WWE, when they first announced the network at CES all those months ago, also said everything's going to be unedited and uncensored and uncut, and that was complete bullshit. But the network, and this is the key here for the Canadian fans, the network will basically just be the live feed that we have here in the U.S. and some on-demand content, some limited on-demand content. How limited, I don't know, but you're probably not going to have access to anywhere close to the amount of on-demand content that we have here, at least not right away. There won't be an internet component to the network until sometime next year. So it'll run like an actual network up there. I'm just not sure if they'll have commercials or how that's going to work. I assume not. They didn't say. But that's what we know. That's what we know so far. It is coming to Canada as an actual pay cable channel offered through Rogers. I wonder when it launches in the UK in October if it's going to be a similar arrangement with Sky. That's just, I'm just thinking out loud here. It's entirely possible. I haven't read or heard anything about that. I know a lot of UK people are wondering the same thing. I don't know. It's certainly possible. What Vince McMahon said is the reason they did this with Rogers is because Rogers made a deal. They made an offer that they just couldn't turn down. They made an offer they couldn't refuse, so that tells me it was for a lot of money. And maybe they're looking at Canada as a guinea pig, and they're using the Canadian market to experiment and see how things go with the network run as an actual network. But we'll see in October whether or not the UK gets the same thing or if they actually get the network as we have it here. WWE had previously speculated that they were going to lose anywhere from $15 to $18 million this quarter. They came in at $14.5 million. And that was a big part of why the stock went up after the news, even though they haven't met expectations with the network. Wall Street liked that. They liked the fact that the losses were not as high as they had speculated, so the stock went up. But there is massive cost-cutting going on. It's already started, which I'm sure also helped the stock. 7% of their workforce up in the tower got laid off on Thursday, which sucks. That's a total of about 60 employees, according to an article on CNNMoney.com. All of these cuts, including the layoffs, are expected to save them about $10 million this year and $30 million in 2015. That is massive. Massive. That's just the next year alone. So that means the cost cutting that they're doing is double what had been originally reported. It was said that Vince McMahon had decreed they have to cut up to $20 million from the budget. In actuality, the number is $40 million. That is staggering. And it's hitting all the departments, television, developmental. They're already talking about how, you know, pyro at WrestleMania next year. Not that there won't be any, but don't expect any sort of spectacular big pyro display at Mania next year like we're used to getting. It may not be that much of an issue anyway, because I think it's outdoors, so it'll be in the daylight, and maybe they can get away with that. But they're cutting costs in all of these different areas. Apparently, the entire magazine division was let go on Thursday. I haven't seen that confirmed by WWE yet, but it does appear that the entire staff was let go. And WWE Magazine will publish its final issue September 16th. I think it'll be on newsstands. That'll be the October issue. That's going to be it. Now, that doesn't mean the magazine is 100% dead. In theory, I guess, if a publisher were to swoop in and they wanted to take over, WWE might allow them to do so, like license it out to them, let them run it, let them incur the costs. But it just means that WWE itself will not be publishing a magazine anymore. And you know what? At the end of the day, the magazine's dead. I don't see a publisher coming in and swooping in and reviving the magazine. It looks like the magazine is dead. And that makes me very sad, because I still have, right behind me, actually, here in my my bookshelf, a stack of WWE magazines, actually two stacks, that I've kept dating back to the first issue I ever bought, which was February of 1992 with Ric Flair on the cover. I still remember that. I actually had Flair sign the cover of that magazine about 5 or 6 years back, and I got it framed. I think it's in my closet somewhere. But I used to collect those things all the time. Look, when I was in junior high, I ran a wrestling magazine. That was a project for school that I started, and I kept it going even after the project was over. I called it New Generation Magazine, and I ran the whole thing myself. I used Print Shop Deluxe, and I put the entire magazine together. Every magazine was 30 to 40 pages. I got input from some of my friends. I had fake advertisements that I put in there. I mean, I was into it, man. I was running this thing like it was the fucking New York Times. And so I was big into the magazines back then. I would read the magazines from them and kind of get ideas on different columns I wanted to have in there, and trivia, puzzles, and stuff like that. So yeah, I was big into all that stuff. So I always had a fondness for the magazine. I used to have a subscription to it. You know, again, we're going back 20 years, 25 years, something like that. I haven't bought the magazine in years. I do remember when they redesigned it a few years ago. I want to say Batista was on the cover of that first issue after the redesign. I liked it. I liked the redesign. It was almost more like, it was done up like a Maxim magazine. I liked the format, but the division wasn't making any money. And print is a dying medium. And look, I work in public relations. I can tell you firsthand, because part of my job is to deal with media and reach out to reporters and editors and newspapers and magazines and TV shows and all that stuff. And you're seeing more and more newspapers die off. More and more magazines are dying off. And the ones that aren't dying off, they're going digital, or they're reducing the physical size of the publication because it is a dying medium. And it was probably just a matter of time before this happened. Power Slam magazine, which I think was based in the UK, they just published its final issue this month. Everything's going digital now. The world has changed. But it's still very sad. Little fact is, when the magazine first published, I think the first issue was back in, I want to say 1983? 83 or 84. It was called Victory Magazine. And it was bi-monthly. It wasn't until a few years later it went monthly. I was a fan back then. So you figure if it went monthly, like 87, 88, I was already a fan at that point. But for whatever reason, I just didn't start buying the magazine until 92. Still my favorite year, by the way. But the cutbacks are enough that WWE apparently now feels that the break-even on the network, which was $1.4 million, is now only $500,000. And it just almost seems incomprehensible to me that that could be true. But that's how much they're cutting. That's how much they're trimming from all of these different departments. If they can just maintain the number of subscribers, if the actual number right now is 690 or 700, let's say, they'll be making money on the network a year from now. I just think that's incredible. Prince Devitt is officially headed to NXT. Again, one of the worst kept secrets in wrestling. We already knew this, but they made the official announcement this week. There's a whole article up on WWE.com. Really good article. They've got photos of him on the indies. And so he's talking about coming down to NXT, learning the style. Devitt's been wrestling for 14 years. He's not a newbie. He's not a rookie. He led the Bullet Club in Japan. AJ Styles took his spot when Devitt gave notice and left the promotion at the beginning of the year. And I think once he did that and it became obvious he was leaving New Japan, everyone knew where he was going to end up. It was just going to take some time, I guess, to work out the visa stuff and all of that. So the question now, I guess, is when does he debut? Is he going to keep his name? What about the body paint? You know, one of the things that Devitt is well known for, and you can YouTube it and you'll find tons of videos, he uses body paint to dress himself up as different characters, like comic book characters. He's dressed himself up as Venom. Venom or Carnage. It's really cool. It's very unique. There's nobody else in wrestling who does something like that, and anything like that that you can do to help yourself stand out is always helpful. Whether WWE allows him to do that, I don't know. I don't see why they wouldn't. I mean, why not? That's part of what makes the guy so appealing. Why are you going to keep bringing in guys and stripping them of what made them unique? It seems stupid to me that they would do that. And the fact that they actually mentioned the body paint, they asked him if he's going to be, you know, bringing in the body paint, and I guess he's also got like a light-up jacket, kind of like Chris Jericho does. I could see the light-up jacket going away since Jericho already does that. But the fact they mentioned the body paint in the column on their website, I know website and creative are kind of disconnected. One doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the other. I take that as a good sign. The fact that they're referring to him by his actual name, which is Fergal Devitt. So I don't see him coming in as Prince Devitt, but it looks like he may be coming in with the Devitt name, whether they just call him Devitt since they're on a one-name kick these days. You know, Big E and Rusev, Cesaro. I could see them just calling him Devitt. Fergal is not exactly a marketable first name. I pray to God they don't bring him in as Fergie. I don't put anything past these people. But yeah, he's on his way in, and I would suspect he will not spend too much time down in NXT. I know Sami Zayn's been down there for a million years now, but I think they made a big deal about this. Triple H has posted pictures of him with Devitt at the Performance Center and at the NXT Arena. I think they get the sense, as many of the fans do, that this guy's kind of a big deal. He's a special kind of performer, like Kenta. You know, they made a big deal about Kenta as well. He had a whole contract signing in Japan with Hulk Hogan, and since he's moved here to the States, Triple H has posted pictures of him and Vince McMahon with Kenta. So I think they realize that these guys, it's a big deal that they're here. They want these guys to succeed. I don't think they want two more failures on Triple H's record. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I think they'll spend probably a couple of months at NXT, but hopefully they'll come up with an idea for these guys and they'll bring them up, because God knows we could use some fresh faces on the main roster. And guys like Cena and Orton and guys like that can use some new opponents. Not that I expect Kenta and Devitt to immediately go to the main event. My point is, though, the quicker you bring these guys up, even if you slot them in the mid-card, wrestling guys like Ziggler and Miz and Barrett and Cesaro and people like that, the quicker you bring them in and they get that under their belt, the quicker they can ascend higher up the card. I would love to see Kenta or Devitt as upper mid-card, if not main event, a year from now, 18 months from now. You know, it took the Shield 18 months to really solidify themselves as main event guys on the roster. It takes that long. Bring them up now so that 18 months from now, they can be in that position. The longer they wait, they're just delaying it and delaying it and delaying it, and I don't want to see that. Ricardo Rodriguez was released on Wednesday. He claims he came to terms with WWE on his release. He's not happy sitting on the sidelines. I think he's hurt right now. I think he's out with some kind of injury, but he hasn't been wrestling very often, and his take is that he wants to wrestle more, so now he'll be able to go out there and wrestle on the indies and do his thing. I don't know. From what I've read, it seems like it wasn't his decision. I think his contract may have been coming up for renewal after SummerSlam, and they cut him. They let him go. He can claim what he wants to claim. If that's what he wanted, then great. He got what he wanted, and now he can wrestle wherever he wants. You know, I think it's a sad thing because they didn't have anything for him. Clearly, he's been the third wheel on the Spanish announce team now for months. They turned him into an announcer after the pairing with Rob Van Dam flopped. And boy, was that a flop. I don't know whose bright idea that was to make him RVD's manager, but that did not work at all. Once they split him up really from Del Rio, that was the beginning of the end. You know, he played the El Local character under a mask. He was this flying luchador. He was mostly a job guy. I don't think he ever won any real meaningful matches. He was never on any of the main shows. He was on NXT. He might have been on Superstars maybe or something. I know he was on the house shows, but that was really it. Last time he wrestled, he teamed with Kalisto against the Ascension at NXT TakeOver a few months ago, and it was not his best performance. I don't know how much that may have hurt him. Had he gone out there that night and tore the house down, maybe they wouldn't have cut him. But once it became clear, I think that Del Rio was flopping once they split the two of them up. I would have put them back together. I would have found a reason somehow to reunite them and get the two of them back together to patch up their differences. I know Del Rio almost murdered the guy, but you could always bring two people back together in wrestling. Bring them back. Bring back the cars. Although now they're cutting costs, so I guess the cars would probably be out anyway. You know, Del Rio used to have a kick-ass entrance. I knock the guy now just because he's boring, he's bland, and he's always wrestling the same opponents over and over and over. You know, Del Rio and Sheamus, Del Rio and Ziggler, Del Rio and Sheamus, Del Rio and Ziggler. So it's hard to get behind a guy like that. He's just dead in the water. He's got nothing going on right now. But he used to have a kick-ass entrance. They had Ricardo, he had the cars. They were a huge part of that character, that aristocratic character that he had. He went babyface. When he went back heel, I think it was a big mistake not to bring that back because he was never the same. And if he was never the same, Ricardo was two levels below him. So Ricardo never stood a chance. So I think it's another missed opportunity. The guy is funny. He's talented. He wants to wrestle more, then God bless him. I mean, hopefully now he'll be able to wrestle more. But I really think WWE dropped the ball with him. You know, it's a busy week in wrestling when it's 45 minutes into this podcast, and I'm only first now getting to Raw from this past Monday night. But Raw was live on Monday in Houston, Texas. This was a good show. There was more that I liked than I disliked. That's a good ratio to have. The show opened with a serious John Cena promo, which was a nice change of pace. I thought this was the best John Cena promo since the go-home show to the TLC match with Orton last December. That was when they had all of the legends and former world champions in the ring with Cena and Orton and Triple H. And they were in Seattle, I think, and the crowd hijacked the segment and they wouldn't shut up for Daniel Bryan, and Cena thought on his feet and he turned it into an interview with Bryan, and then he turned his attention to Orton. I thought that was great. This was probably the best Cena promo since then. So we're talking more than 6 months here. And Paul Heyman came out to jaw-jack back and forth with Cena. He was there to represent Lesnar since Brock was not on the show this week. He said Brock will victimize Cena. He used the word victimize no less than 50 times. Cesaro came out. He said that while he and Paul Heyman have agreed to go their separate ways, they are still friends. He called John Cena a big, muscled-up billboard who can't wrestle, and then he made fun of his tennis shoes. Cena told Cesaro to get in the ring right now, and he would wrestle circles around him. And so there you go. Just when I got done complimenting John Cena for cutting out the jokes and being serious, he starts with the comedy again. The match itself was a little choppy in spots, but they went through two commercial breaks. A long match, good match. Cesaro took most of it before eating an AA, got pinned. But still, though, you know, it's another loss for Cesaro. He also tapped out to Jack Swagger in the Patriot Lock on SmackDown Friday night. Swagger, by the way, will meet Rusev in a flag match at SummerSlam that is now official. Cesaro likely will be shut out unless they put him on the kickoff show. Paige came out to apologize, she said, to AJ for her actions the week before, basically beating the shit out of her. She came out to apologize. "I'm still your friend," she said, "and if you don't believe that, you must be crazy." She said the C word, which set off AJ. AJ went ballistic on Paige. Paige got away. The two stared at each other from afar while the fans chanted CM Punk at AJ. Maybe if they change AJ's name to CM Punk, these people will finally shut the hell up. I caught the angle with these two on SmackDown. They did a follow-up. AJ won her match, skipped up to the entranceway, and as she was posing, Paige came from off-camera and shoved her off the stage. And what was weird about this whole thing is the stages now are not like they used to be back in the day. Like, the Raw ramp and the top of the stage, I mean, if I had to estimate, you know, I would say you're probably looking at like a 7 or 8 foot drop back in the day. You know, some people might say 10. I think that's exaggerating it a little bit. But seriously, the drop now, it's like a 2 or 3 foot drop onto carpeting, no less. I don't think they had carpeting back in the day either when you got knocked off. So this looked a little goofy because she knocked AJ off the stage, like 2 feet down onto the carpet, and AJ did a stretcher job out of it. So that was a little much. Paige, though, you know, I don't know if she's supposed to be crazy. I don't think she is. I think she's supposed to be a heel who is simply still masquerading as this girl's best friend. I thought Paige in this segment on SmackDown was awesome. I think ever since she did the heel turn a few weeks ago, she has found her niche. I said it before because I saw Paige, as a lot of you people did, I'm sure, watching NXT. She was still a babyface in that the people in NXT cheered for her, but she was more of like a bratty heel type, and that's the role for her. She's got to be a brat. She's got to be a heel. Babyface, you know, all smiles Paige, which is what she was when she was brought up. She was miscast. I'm not even sure why they thought that would be a good idea. You would think that Triple H or one of the coaches or agents at NXT who was around this girl for so many months and could see her strengths and weaknesses would say something. Maybe it fell on deaf ears. I don't know, you know, why they would have put her in that character or that position in the first place. But I think she's finding herself now as a heel, and it's fun to watch. AJ's laying there on the ground, and Paige just sits on the edge of the stage looking down as they're working on her. And she's like, oh, come on. You're being overdramatic. She's fine. We're best friends. Come on, get up, AJ. I thought it was great, and I'm looking forward to their match at SummerSlam. Triple H and Stephanie came out for a segment. Invited Brie Bella out to settle their differences. Apparently all the charges against Stephanie except one was dropped. And she's trying to get Brie here to drop the remaining charge against her. I have to say, I really was disappointed they didn't have any follow-up at all to Triple H not rushing to the jail last week to try to bail out his wife or be there with his wife. I thought that was going somewhere. Jericho here, because Jericho came out, he kind of brought it up, but nothing ever happened. Like, he brought it up, and Stephanie didn't look at him, you know, she didn't look at her husband in a mean way. It didn't go anywhere. So maybe they just changed direction. I could have sworn that after Raw last week, when Triple H didn't rush to her aid, they posted a story on the website that said it took him like 2 hours. He didn't get to the jail until like 1 a.m., and then here in this segment, Jericho's like, well, I know you got to the jail 15 minutes later when the show ended, but this is what I said earlier. There's this disconnect between creative and between what's on WWE.com. That's why whenever people go gaga over some of this stuff on the website, you know, Joey Styles is very smart in terms of how he works that website, because they'll put stories up that name drop Ring of Honor. Like I said, they did this whole great story on Prince Devitt. They did this great story a couple weeks ago on Dean Ambrose. They had a lot of history in there about his days doing death matches in CZW, and, you know, it's fun, but it's the sort of thing that will never, ever get brought up on television. There's just this disconnect between the website and the TV people or the creative people, and they said one thing, and then here on the show, it's almost like they live in a completely alternate universe. So I was disappointed in that, but Jericho came out, felt like the Attitude Era all over again. I knew exactly where this was going, and Jericho did not disappoint. He managed to get in a dirty, disgusting, filthy, bottom-feeding, trash-bag ho reference for old time's sake. Although, before he could say ho, Triple H cut him off, because, you know, it's PG. I guess it's okay to say bitch 5,000 times on this show, but ho is completely unacceptable. Jericho also led the crowd in singing the Bad Boys theme from Cops, Spike TV's number one program. Triple H said to Jericho, you ought to be focused on Bray Wyatt. And Jericho said, I am. I actually want Bray in a match tonight. Triple H instead made the match for SummerSlam. Seth Rollins came out. He attacked Jericho from behind with the briefcase. So that set up a match for later in the show. Dolph Ziggler and the Usos beat The Miz and Rybacksel when Dolph Ziggler pinned Ryback with the zigzag. Dolph wins again. 2 weeks in a row. It almost, it seems like a dream. During the match, Xavier Woods, Big E, Kofi Kingston looked on. So they're teasing a tag title match, I think, with the Usos at SummerSlam. We didn't get that big promo, though, from Woods. This was another thing that disappointed me. I was really intrigued when they started this thing the week before. and everyone said, oh, it's a new Nation of Domination. I even said last week, I just referred to it as the new Nation because it looked like they were forming a similar type of group, but I didn't know. You know, I said, let's see what the follow-up is. Well, the follow-up was that there was no follow-up. There was no promo. There was no interview with Big E, with Kofi, with Xavier Woods. They were just kind of watching the action, and that was it. And, I mean, maybe there was something on SmackDown. I didn't see all of SmackDown yet, but that was very disappointing to me. The streak is over. 17 and Bo, no mo, after R-Truth. R-Truth pinned Bo Dallas with what else? A roll-up in 30 seconds. Finish came after Bo Dallas was mocking R-Truth for always losing. He did a victory lap around the ring. Then he got rolled up. And afterwards, Bo congratulated R-Truth on the mic. Then he nailed him with the microphone. And he beat the crap out of Truth. So the story here is that the loss has caused Bo Dallas to snap and reveal a more sinister side. It was a good way to show off his mean streak, but really, R-Truth. R-Truth for this. Why not debut Sami Zayn in that spot? Bring up some kid from NXT that nobody's ever heard of before. I mean, R-Truth, hey, look, at one point, R-Truth, remember, he headlined a pay-per-view with John Cena. He main evented a Survivor Series with The Rock. Wasn't that many years ago. He's been a bigger star. I think it would have been cool to have, like, Zayn, let's say, some kid from NXT that I say that nobody's ever heard of. I mean, obviously, I'm sure the moment he makes his debut in front of a live crowd on Raw, you're going to get Chance. You're going to get Ole Ole Chance. People will know who Sami Zayn is. I think a good portion of the people will. But still, he's this new guy from the developmental system. He comes in. Bo Dallas is all cocky. Hey, Sammy, how you doing? I haven't seen you in a while. How are things down there? And then he gets rolled up and he freaks out and he can't believe it. And Sami Zayn is positioned as this underdog figure, and maybe the first feud for Bo Dallas is with Sami Zayn. You know, they've worked some matches together down at NXT. Adam Rose pinned Damian Sandow, who was dressed up as an astronaut since they were in Houston. The less said about this, the better. These segments accomplish nothing for anybody involved. They are a total waste of time. I'm over it. I'm sick of it. I don't care. Kane and Roman Reigns was supposed to be a match. Never happened, though. Randy Orton, who is very upset with Triple H for giving the SummerSlam title shot to Brock Lesnar. Because with Roman Reigns on his ass, Orton can't be relied on as the number one contender. Roman Reigns is going to be there at every turn to screw things up. So he attacked Reigns while Reigns was still in the crowd making his entrance. They brawled back to ringside. Reigns started to make a comeback. Kane shut that down. He helped Orton beat him down. Then Kane left, and Orton just systematically destroyed Roman Reigns. This was vicious viper Randy Orton on this show. No remorse shown whatsoever. Orton was at his best as a heel here in this segment. This is the most vicious we've seen his character in a long-ass time. We've seen a lot of pussy Randy Orton, quite frankly. not unlike Pussy Magnus in TNA. So this was the first time in a long time that Orton just he went off on somebody. He beat the hell out of this guy. It took two attempts, but he finally RKO'd Reigns through the announce table. Kept shouting, nobody steals from me. So there's your SummerSlam match. One thing I have to say about Roman Reigns, one small critique. I said before how sometimes I think he can speak too low. He should speak louder on promos. He relies way too much on that Superman punch. I don't know if that's coming from him. If the people in the back said, hey, use that move, use it more often. But he should stop doing that. You know, it would mean more if he busted it out, let's say, one time in a match instead of five times. I just think he's overusing it. Diego pinned Fandango with the distraction roll-up. I said on Twitter that they should fire all the agents, every last one of them, or whoever's responsible for these roll-up finishes. It's just absurd. It's absurd at this point. I mean, what is this? Every week, multiple times on every show, every single week, we get roll-ups. Most of the time because of a distraction, but any kind of roll-up. You know, it's like, what has wrestling become? Are they really that lazy? Do they not realize that they're doing the same finish multiple times every single show? Is it that hard to have a clean pinfall or a clean submission. Give me a fucking count out, for Christ's sake. Give me anything. I mean, not that that finish where you beat your opponent so badly you get DQ'd is much better, because it's not. That's the second most horrendous finish in WWE. At least we're not seeing walkouts anymore. Remember we used to see walkouts from Fandango and other people every single week? At least they're not doing that anymore. That's an improvement. They've got to just stop it with these roll-ups. Enough already. Naomi and Natalya beat Cameron and her idol, Alicia Fox, in 2 minutes and 46 seconds, according to the Divas stopwatch. Naomi tapped out Cameron with a leg scissor headlock. That was retribution for the worst tree of woe I think I've ever seen in this match. Cameron nearly dropped Naomi on her head going for a tree of woe. She should never try that move ever again. Chris Jericho and Seth Rollins were having a good match until the finish. Lights went out. Lights came back on. Wyatts were in the ring. Rollins was nowhere to be found. So that was a no contest. Wyatts attacked Jericho, left him laying to build to Jericho versus Eric Rowan on SmackDown, which Jericho won. No Dean Ambrose at all on the show. He was there. I think they said something like he was doing promotional work somewhere, but he came out for a dark match later in the night. So he was there. They just did not have a place for him on the show, which was disappointing. I got to say, you know, the build-up to this match here has really, I think, cooled off in the last 2 weeks. Ever since Battleground, this simmering heat between Rollins and Ambrose, I mean, they went to the pay-per-view, they did the bait and switch, we didn't get the match, but they had this intense brawl where Ambrose just was tearing this guy apart, and officials and Triple H had to come out and break them up, and it feels like ever since the pay-per-view, they've done nothing. They have done nothing to build this feud up. There's been no angle on Raw. I mean, I'm not saying that Dean Ambrose should be a carbon copy of Stone Cold Steve Austin. I know a lot of people compare him. He's the closest thing to an Austin type that we have on the roster these days, this anti-authority, crazy guy on the roster. You would think they would come up with an idea for some kind of segment, maybe where Ambrose drives some sort of vehicle into the arena. He will stop at nothing to get his hands on Rollins, and they've done nothing the last 2 weeks. So I think it's really cooled off what had been, I think, the top angle in the company. I don't see how you can call it the top angle in the company anymore. I think Stephanie and Brie Bella has replaced it as the hottest feud, believe it or not, right now at this moment in WWE. In terms of what they're actually doing on TV, in terms of the crowd reactions and the heat for it. And that's disappointing. They got to get that thing going here, because I think those guys are going to go out at SummerSlam and they're going to have an awesome match. I have no doubt in my mind they're going to go out there, they're going to steal the show, they're going to have a kick-ass match. But you've still got a few more weeks until SummerSlam. You've got to get people interested in that match. You've got to give them a reason to want to see Dean Ambrose rip this guy's eyeballs out of his socket. I'm hoping they do that on Raw this week. They've got a couple more weeks. Hopefully they can reignite that thing. Speaking of Stephanie and Brie, that led us to the main event. Stephanie McMahon and Brie Bella headline Raw on Monday night. They were in the final segment. It's funny how we've gone from Daniel Bryan feuding with Triple H and headlining Raws to their wives main eventing the show against one another. It's not Triple H versus Bryan anymore. It's Stephanie versus Brie. It's just funny how we've transitioned into this now. I like this because it was nice to see the women ending the show for a change. You don't get to see that very often. And I know that third hour of Raw, it kind of bombed. I mean, it still did 4 million viewers, but it was a huge drop-off from hour two. Did that have to do with the women being in the main event? Probably, but there's no way to know for sure. But I hope they do that more often. Not necessarily put Stephanie and Brie in main event segments on Raw, but like, you've got AJ and Paige, okay? I'm starting to really get into this AJ and Paige thing finally. I think Paige has found the right role. They're going to have a match at SummerSlam. I'm sure that won't be the end of the feud. It'll go through at least Night of Champions, maybe even a little bit longer. Well, what if you go through these next one or two pay-per-views, and then finally you've done everything you can do, you want to blow it off, so you build to a big-time Raw main event of AJ versus Paige for the Divas title in some sort of hardcore, like, gimmicky type of match, whether it's just no DQ or some other kind of stipulation, maybe a cage match. I mean, maybe the PG thing would hold them back from doing that, but, you know, we've seen that in TNA. Taryn Terrell and Gail Kim had a ladder match that was awesome on Impact last year, and it was so unique because I can't even remember seeing a ladder match with women ever. Not in any of the major companies. It made it unique. It was an attraction. I felt like I have to see this. I have to see how this match is. And that was coming off a great I want to say it was also maybe a no DQ or false count anywhere kind of match between Gail Kim and Taryn Terrell at, was it Slammiversary? I want to say it was Slammiversary last year. If they could do that in TNA, they could do that in WWE. I vaguely remember there being a cage match on Impact once between Mickey James and somebody. Okay, why not try something with the women like that? If AJ and Paige continues to build and it becomes this big rivalry and people are into it, they're booing Paige and they're behind AJ because AJ is very popular. When it's time to blow this thing off and you've had two pay-per-view matches or three pay-per-view matches already, why not use that fourth and final match and blow it off on Raw in a big-time main event and put them in a cage or make it a weapons match or something? Anything they can do to break up the monotony of these shows and kind of break out of their usual formula, in my opinion, is a positive. Whether it involves the women or something else, I'm all for it. That's just one of a million ideas that you can come up with. But Stephanie, I got to say this. Stephanie has got to be in the lead right now for best WWE performer, overall performer in 2014. There is no better heel in the company, male or female, than Stephanie McMahon. Now, that says a lot about the sad state of heels, I think, in the PG era. But still, she's awesome. I mean, she's great in that role. Brie came out of the crowd to meet Stephanie in the ring. Again, Brie doesn't work for the company, so she's not coming down the aisle. Stephanie asks her to drop the remaining charges against her. Brie says no. She calls Stephanie a rich bitch. Stephanie offered her a raise. Suddenly, Brie perked up, and she grew interested, which doesn't help the stereotype that all women are interested in her money. But Brie said, oh, okay, well, I can go for that. But she also wanted her job back, which got a loud yes chant from the crowd. I really hope this doesn't turn into a Mark Merrow Sable deal where Brian comes back 6 months from now and his wife is more over than he is, because that was the beginning of the end for Mark Merrow's career. I think Brian is so well-liked and just better than Mark Merrow, quite frankly, that's not going to be a problem, but hopefully not. Finally, Brie agreed to drop the charges if Stephanie gave her her job back. Stephanie reluctantly agreed, but there was one more thing. She wants a match with Stephanie at SummerSlam. Stephanie tried to talk her way out of it. She was almost in tears. She was saying, I haven't wrestled in 10 years. Which is true. Last time she was in a match, her father was choking her with a pipe on pay-per-view. Very creepy family those McMahons are. Stephanie finally agreed. She was almost weeping. She was so distraught. Only it was all an act because she slapped the shit out of Brie, knocked her off the apron down to the floor. At SummerSlam, I'm going to make you my bitch, Stephanie said. And Brie ran back in to attack Stephanie. There was a big pull-apart brawl. Triple H was out there with his merry band of stooges. Joey Mercury, Fit Finlay, Jamie Noble, who got loud chants as the show went off the air. I thought at first they were chanting, this is awesome, but in fact they were chanting Jamie Noble. So he was the star, I guess, of the main event here. I really did, I liked the segment. I liked the build. I think the build for Stephanie and Brie has been far better than the build, let's say, for Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. That should not be the case, but it is right now. There was an article on Bleacher Report talking about how Stephanie vs. Brie is destined to disappoint at SummerSlam. And I'm familiar with the guy's work, the writer. Okay, he's a good writer, the guy. But it talked about how the match won't be able to deliver. It goes into Dave Meltzer's star ratings for Brie Bella matches not being up to snuff. And I'm like, really, dude? You're using Dave Meltzer's star ratings as a barometer for this match? There isn't a person on earth who's looking forward to this match thinking, screw the G1 climax, I can't wait to see Stephanie McMahon, a non-wrestler who hasn't had a match in 11 years, and Brie Bella put on a wrestling clinic at SummerSlam. It's more of an angle than a match, really, when you think about it. I just thought the whole thing was silly. I think everybody needs to just temper their expectations with this match. I'm looking forward to it because I'm into the angle, and I think Stephanie is a great performer. She's more and more like her father every week. Did people expect Vince McMahon to go out there with Steve Austin the first time and deliver a 4-star match? No. They wanted to see McMahon get his ass kicked by Stone Cold. It's no different here. People want to see Stephanie get her comeuppance. and Brie Bella win her job back. Seems pretty straightforward to me. NXT, not immune to the cutbacks. There were five releases on Friday. Garrett Dillon, real name Jody Christopherson, Chris Christopherson's kid, who I think had been one of the Rosebuds recently. Travis Tyler, Mac Miles, who only first made his NXT debut this week as one of the guys who got squashed by the Ascension, so he didn't last very long. Danny Jax, who was the lone female release, and Slate Randall, the Hollywood He-Man, the former Sean Ricker from Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, also the guy who appeared on The Rock's reality show The Hero. That cut shocked the hell out of me. You may remember, I think, at the beginning of the year when I was talking about possible NXT call-ups this year, people to look out for. I believe I mentioned Slate Randall as one of those people. I just can't believe they cut him. Now he had not yet debuted on TV. Last I heard, he was out with a concussion. But, you know, he's only 31. He's got a great look. He was the last man Paul Bearer managed before he died last year. I think he saw a lot of potential in him. You can go find videos of the guy on YouTube. Go find videos of his promos back from his Sean Ricker days. The guy is money. So unless there was some kind of medical issue here that we're not aware of, I think WWE made a big, big mistake. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, when I first saw the names on that list, the first two or three, it didn't really shock me because even the ones who were actually on NXT, they weren't really used as anything other than to put other people over. But when I saw the name Slate Randall, my jaw dropped. I just couldn't believe it. I would love to know the rationale behind letting a guy like that go. It just seems incredibly stupid to me. We also learned that the next live NXT special will air on September 11th on the WWE Network, and will, I don't know if they actually announced this exactly, but it sure sounded from the promo that Triple H cut like the name of this next show is going to be TakeOver 2. Yes, the sequel. I'm calling it TakeOver 2 Electric Boogaloo. I don't know. You know, why not something like NXT Unleashed or NXT Fury? I mean, come on. You guys are slacking. Surely you could come up with a better name than that. Tyler Breeze on NXT this week opened the show. He beat Angelo Dawkins with the beauty shot, where you're seeing a much more aggressive Tyler Breeze. I think we've seen a much more aggressive Tyler Breeze since the match with, was it Sami Zayn? Oh, I can't even remember anymore. Sami Zayn, yes, at TakeOver, right. He beat Sami Zayn, became the number one contender, and now we're waiting on the match with Neville. That match with Sami Zayn was excellent. I think he's opened up a lot of eyes, Tyler Breeze has, in terms of the character is not just a comedy character. I mean, obviously it's kind of meant to be funny to some degree, but he's not really there for comedy. He's there to be hated. And it just so happens the people in that building love the guy. They love to go against the grain. They cheer a lot of the heels and boo some of the baby faces. That's just how it is. But I like this mean streak that they've added to his character, or that he's added to his character in recent weeks, and that's really what developmental is, right? These guys are developing, and we're seeing this guy develop right before our very eyes, and I think it's only going to help that character going forward. When the match was over, he tossed Dawkins out of the ring, got on the mic, he teased a big announcement, likely that he will be finally getting his match with Neville for the NXT title. We were going to find out when, but instead he says the big news is that he has submitted his music video for an Oscar in the category of Best Documentary. And that got massive applause from the NXT faithful. Chance of thank you, Tyler. That brings out Adrian Neville. Breeze said that he was getting a call from the director of The Hobbit on his phone, and the director said that Neville was needed back on the set. And, well, he does kind of look like The Hobbit, I have to say. Neville then followed up by telling Tyler that his mom sent him a Snapchat, and it looks as if he is not the only member of the Breeze family who likes taking selfies. Oh my goodness. Shit just got real. Breeze snapped. Neville got the better of him. And the number one contender got the hell out of Dodge. That was quite great. I thought that the back and forth there was excellent. I haven't read any of the spoilers. I'd rather not know yet what the top three matches are going to be for TakeOver. I do know it's going to be an NXT title match, a women's match, and I think a tag team title match. I assume that the NXT title match on that show is going to be Breeze versus Neville. If so, I think it's impressive how long they've been able to stretch this out for. I didn't think they were going to be able to go from May to September without having these guys have a single match, but they've managed to hold it off, and so now I have to assume that's going to be the date for the championship match. And you know, that's how it was done back in the day when you didn't have as many shows. You could go from one show to another after 4 or 5 months and let it build and not blow it off, you know, the very next month and have 5 million rematches. You can really take your time to build these things up. So in a lot of ways, NXT is like a throwback. JoJo from Total Divas, she's still there. Yeah, she's still employed. She was backstage doing interviews this week, and in one night, she showed more charisma than Devon Taylor did in 6 months. She interviewed Natalya, asked her about Adam Rose for some reason. He was back on NXT this week. I love how they were building it up like, oh, Adam Rose is back. Wasn't he on the show like 3 weeks ago? When did he leave? I thought that was kind of silly. So anyway, they're asking Natalya about Adam Rose, and this did not sit well with Tyson Kidd, who sidled up to her, and he ended up challenging Rose to a match later in the show. Well, I hope Adam Rose didn't already have something special planned, being that they were promoting his return. I guess it was whatever they had planned for him got dropped, and now they set up the match with him and Tyson Kidd. That was sarcasm, by the way. It's sometimes hard to detect. We learned that the tag team division on NXT sucks so bad that they're doing a tournament to determine a new number one contender to try to take the titles from the Ascension. That will start next week. Charlotte pinned Becky Lynch in a non-title match. Becky Lynch no longer dancing an Irish jig on her way down to the ring, which is good. Now she likes punk rock or something, I think they said on commentary. I think it was Renee compared her to Lita on commentary. That's a mighty big leap right there. Fans chanted CM Punk at one point during this match, so a hearty fuck you to the NXT universe. Charlotte finished her off with the bow down to the queen cutter, somersault cutter. To the back, JoJo is with Mojo. He's looking for a partner for the tag team tournament. He wants that person to be hyped. In walks Bull Dempsey, who is not hyped. He tells Mojo, "You're looking for a partner. I'm looking for a partner. So why don't we be partners in this tag team tournament?" This is deep stuff here. Deep dialogue here on this show. The Ascension squashed another team, including one guy so badly that WWE released him the very next day. They cut a promo after the match saying nothing of any real note, but fans are digging them. They're getting behind them. They're like a modern-day PG version of the APA. It's the best way I can describe it. We got a CJ Parker video package. It recapped his issues with Xavier Woods. They're going to have a rematch next week. I cannot believe this feud is continuing. Mojo Rawley and Bull Dempsey in their first match as a team beat the Mechanics in their first match as a team. Scott Dawson, who's been out with a leg injury and is no longer managed by Sylvester Lefort. And this guy, Dash Wilder, who is a former indie wrestler. His name is Steven Walters. Mojo took the lion's share of the offense from Dawson and Wilder during this match. It was weird seeing Mojo be the one to be kind of beaten down. That meant Bull Dempsey got the hot tag. He ran wild, got the win with the Bulldozer. So now they're undefeated. They're 1-0. They got a new streak here. You know, we've seen two streaks come to an end this year. We need a new one. So maybe it'll be Mojo and Bull. I'm guessing the partnership will not end well, but we'll see. Rich Brennan was backstage to interview Bayley. Charlotte interrupted and told Bayley it was in her best interest to never mention her name again. So it looks like we know who the next challenger for the women's title will be. Probably on that September 11th show, Electric Boogaloo. Adam Rose and Tyson Kidd was the main event. You know, I'm so torn on Adam Rose. I've come to really dislike his character. I just don't like him. But then I see him bust out one of those old Leo Kruger spinebusters during this match, which is the closest thing to an old school Arn Anderson, you know, spinebuster. That guy Scott Dawson, who's now part of the Mechanics, when he was with Sylvester Lefort as a singles, William Regal on commentary would always compare his spinebuster to Arn Anderson's, and I couldn't understand it because it didn't look all that spectacular. It's like, here's this mid-card level guy who does a normal-looking spinebuster, and here you're comparing him to Arn Anderson. It almost seemed forced, like he was trying too hard to help get the guy over. I didn't buy it. Leo Kruger, though, when he bust out that spinebuster, that looks like the second coming of AA. That's a comparison that I could see. So he is a really good wrestler. It's just the character is not working for me. And I'm sure a big part of that is how he's been booked on TV so far. It just doesn't work. I'm more into the bunny than I am Adam Rose. That shouldn't be. But Rose went over to Natalya at the beginning of the match. He handed his lollipop to her to suck on at one point. And this got Tyson Kidd very upset. I would think that if another man handed my wife something of his to suck on, I'd be pretty pissed off about that too. End came when Rose went for the party foul. Tyson countered it, ended up slingshotting Rose under the bottom rope, throat first. Then he got into an argument with Natalya over something and got rolled up by Adam Rose for the pin. They sure do love their roll-ups, don't they? It's mind-boggling to me they haven't signed a deal with Fruit Roll-Ups to sponsor all of their shows. Okay, it just seems like it would make sense. So Tyson Kidd sat dejected in the ring as the crowd chanted, "Natty's better" at him, and we faded out. So whatever the issues are between Tyson and Natty are continuing. It's building to something. And for Tyson Kidd's sake, if it is a breakup, I sure hope it isn't, because we've seen this time and time again before in wrestling that oftentimes art imitates life. I don't think that's what Tyson Kidd wants to have happen here. Thank you guys for taking time out of your day to listen to The Sound Off. I get questions from people asking, how can I support the podcast? Well, the best way to support the show is simple. Just keep listening each and every week. Keep spreading the word about it to friends and family and retweet or share links to the episodes on Twitter and Facebook. But beyond that, you can contribute by making a PayPal donation or by signing up for a free 30-day trial of the Audible.com service. Making a PayPal donation is simple. Just log on to thesolemonster.com and you'll see the PayPal donation box on the right-hand side of the page. Enter whatever amount you'd like and click the Make a Donation button. That's it. Or sign up for a free Audible trial by entering our custom URL, audibletrial.com/solemonster. From there, you can sign up free for 30 days, which helps us out. You get one free audiobook as part of your trial that you get to keep no matter what. You can browse through their library of over 150,000 titles. Listen to your books at home, on the commute to work, at the gym, whenever, wherever. Sign up at audibletrial.com/solemonster or visit thesolemonster.com to make a donation right now. And thank you for supporting The Sound Off. On a more positive TNA note, they had their Destination X edition of Impact on Thursday night. If you like great wrestling, you got a lot of that on this show. I didn't like that Destination X of all shows, which should be all about action and high-flying, open with a Dixie Carter promo. You can have that on the show. Just don't open with it. Open with like a hot X Division match, like Nitro used to open with Cruiserweights back in the day. That's what Destination X I thought was all about. But Dixie came out. She had her entire entourage with her, including Gene Snitsky and Ezekiel Jackson, now going by his real name of Rick Klon. EC3 did most of the talking. He challenged Bully Ray, D-Von, and Tommy Dreamer to a final match against each other. Dixie spent most of her time talking about ECW, which may work fine for New York City, but I am so over all of this ECW nostalgia. I mean, just enough already with the ECW stuff. 2014, and we're still talking about this shit. Hardys and the Wolves for the TNA World Tag Team titles. This was a really fun match. Went about 10 minutes. I'd have shaved 5 minutes off that Dixie promo and given it to this match, but that's me. Actually, I would have shaved off that entire Dixie segment and spread it out amongst the matches on this show. At one point, Matt locked Eddie Edwards in his ice pick submission move. Then Jeff locked Davey in the same move, so they had stereo ice picks going on here. He tried to make the save Davey did, but he got caught. So now we have these two guys locked in the submission. If I didn't already know the Wolves had the belts at the tapings that I went to the day after this was taped, I might have bought this as the finish, maybe with them doing a return match the next night, but they got out of it. Lots of near falls here. Match ended with Matt Hardy taking a wicked midair backstabber. Basically, he was sitting on Eddie Edwards' shoulders, and Eddie turned around. Davey was on the top rope, and he came off with the backstabber. And it looked like the back of Matt's head took the brunt of Davey's knees. Just brutal. Wolves got the pin, and afterwards both teams shook hands. This is exactly what this should have been. Great action, crowd was hot for it, and in the end, the younger guys won. They're doing Hardys versus Dudleys versus Wolves for the tag team titles at the August 6th tapings in New York, so that's this coming Wednesday. It's too bad I'm going to miss that. I'll be there for Hardcore Justice the night before. They aired a fun video package on Low Ki, introducing him or reintroducing him to the TNA audience. Dude should be doing voiceover work for commercials or something. He's got a great voice. Low Ki, Matic, and DJ Zima, who just re-signed a multi-year deal with TNA. Now, a guy like Zima Ion, I'm guessing, unlike, say, a Sting or a Kurt Angle, is probably only getting paid per appearance, so it's not like he's getting paid when he's not wrestling for them, but still, good for the guy. I'm happy for him. I don't know that TNA has multiple years left, but people have been saying that for 12 years, and somehow they're still around. You know, TNA is like that cockroach that you step on, but it gets embedded in the carpet, so when you lift your foot, the fucking thing runs away. It just won't die. Then you spray it with something, and it kind of slows down. Maybe it even staggers around a little bit, but then it shakes it off and just keeps on going. That's TNA. This was an X Division qualifier. We got three of them on this show, with each winner advancing to a three-way match to crown a new X Division champion. This after Austin Aries cashed in his title shot for a shot at Lashley's World Championship on this show. That poor X Division title. Always a bridesmaid, never a bride. Low Ki got the win with the Ki Crusher. There was a clever spot here I liked a lot where Matic had DJ Z set up for a deathlock. And he's about to wrench back on it, but before he can do so, Low Ki comes over and he just kept kicking Matic in the chest. And every time he would kick Matic in the chest, Matic would fall down backwards. And each time he did that, DJ Z would just shriek in pain because he was still locked in the leg lock. So I thought that was cool. James Storm came out, talked about Sonata turning on his mentor, the Great Fraud. That's what he called him. I don't think he would have gotten over as much as he did, Muta, had he gone by that name instead. He's now mentoring Sonata, James Storm is. Sonata came to the ring for another one of those X Division qualifiers. He beat Brian Cage, the former gut check guy, who looked jacked to the gills. Taz even used the word jack to describe him on commentary. And Crazy Steve from the Menagerie was in this match as well. Cage looked good for the time that he was in there. I wonder who the other guy was that got picked over him on gut check. Wasn't it Christian York? I think it was Christian York. It was either Christian York or the Boomstick guy, Jay Bradley. I can't remember. It didn't work out too well either. Anyway, Sonata won with the Tiger Suplex on Crazy Steve, so he advances. Backstage, Bobby Roode approached Austin Aries before his big meeting with Lashley and said that it was deja vu all over again. 2 years ago, Aries first unveiled Option C. He gave up the X Division title and beat Bobby Roode at Destination X to win the championship. And now here they are. Aries is cashing in for another shot. And Bobby Roode, after all these years, finally admitted that Aries beat him fair and square. In fact, it was not a fluke, which Aries was sure to make him repeat multiple times. I really hope if TNA dies, WWE at least gives these guys a look, even as a tag team. Bring them in as a team, and then they could always branch out as singles. You know, they could really use some new teams in WWE, and if that's their only way in, then so be it. I loved it when these two guys were a team. I thought they were great. Bully, D-Von, and Tommy Dreamer came to the ring. Dreamer talked about what it meant to be hardcore, almost cried. He told Team Dixie to come on down right now and they could fight. Heels came out, said it would happen next week. And Bully said it's going to be an 8-man weapons match. And he guaranteed, not only did he guarantee, he swore to God that next week he would put Dixie Carter through a table. And that was the biggest issue I had with them doing what they did, by the way, at the end of the show, which I'll get to later. We got a vignette for a newcomer coming to TNA. All we know is the person's name, or first or last, we don't know, starts with the letter H. And I see reports online that it's going to be a new knockout, Jessica Havoc, who's wrestled for Shine and CZW before. What I do know is if it's Jessica Havoc, okay, if she's the one coming in, she better hurry up, because things aren't looking too good. Samoa Joe, back in the X Division. He beat the returning Homicide and Tigre Uno in the longest of the qualifiers on this show. Seeing Joe and Homicide in there was a throwback to their ROH days many years ago. Joe hit the muscle buster on Homicide for the pin. So next week, it's Samoa Joe, Low Ki, and Sonata to crown a new X Division champion. I was at that show where that match was taped, so they must be airing stuff out of order. I didn't think those shows would start airing until the 14th. I thought they had one more taping from night two to air, but it looks like they're airing things out of order. They also had an Abyss promo announcing his Monsters Ball match with Bram for next week's show. That was the match that opened up the tapings that I went to, so you'll probably see my ugly mug in the front row on next week's show. My Impact debut, and not a week too soon either. It looks like I'll make my debut before Jessica Rabbit does. Main event was... Wait, did I call her Jessica Rabbit? What the fuck? Jessica Havoc. Although, who knows? Who the fuck knows? Maybe Jessica Rabbit is making her TNA debut. Can't be any worse. Main event was Aries and Lashley for the TNA title. Jesus Christ. This is a really good match. Probably slightly better, I would rank it, than Lashley's match with Jeff Hardy a few weeks ago. One thing I noticed from this match, Bobby Lashley sweats like a friggin' hog. By the end, he was like leaking sweat, the way that you would if you were busted open and bleeding all over the place. Just pouring out of this guy's head. Brock Lesnar is the same way. Maybe he's got like a gland problem. I don't know. But lots of near falls at the end that the crowd bought into. Spear attempt by Lashley. Aries turned it into a last chancery. Lashley got out of it. Aries tried for a brainbuster, but Lashley reversed it into a front suplex. He went for a spear yet again. This time he hit the post. And discus forearm. Drop kick in the corner. We see, he's building up here. He's getting ready. And sure enough, Austin Aries goes for the brainbuster. He got him up, barely. It was tough, because Lashley is a ginormous man, a lot bigger than Austin Aries. But he got him up for it, and dropped him on his head. People bought into this as the finish. It was great when Lashley kicked out. Great near fall. Aries couldn't believe it, so he did what he did in his match with Sonata, if you remember. When he won back the X Division title, he went to Plan B, which was the 450 splash. Lashley wisely rolled out of the ring, and so Aries went for a tope through the ropes. Lashley moved out of the way, and to say that Austin Aries crashed and burned into the guardrail, I think would be an understatement. He slammed into that guardrail and knocked himself silly. He was done for at that point. Lashley rolled him back inside, hit the spear, got the pin. Still your TNA World Heavyweight Champion, Bobby Lashley, and yet another clean, decisive pinfall win for the champion. That's how you book your Monster World Champion. Now, the end of the show, they aired a video. It was a video that was, it was a spoiler. Technically, it was a teaser slash spoiler video showing some highlights from next week's show of Team 3D lifting Dixie Carter up for a powerbomb through a table. And they used the hashtag, It Happens, in the video. All the wrestlers now on social media, on Twitter, are using the hashtag It Happens in their tweets. You can add an S and an H to the beginning of that, and it would be an appropriate hashtag still, I think, to use for TNA. I would not have done this. You know, I know why they did. They really want to pop a big number next week. They've been building this, and they want people to know the time is over, the time for waiting is over. It's actually going to happen next week. So I know why they did it. I just wouldn't have done it that way. You know, Bully on this same show already guaranteed it. He swore to God. You know, when you have your top babyface guarantee something and swear to God that he's going to do something, you know he's going to deliver. So why outright spoil it? I know a lot of people, they're on the internet. They know these shows were taped. They probably know the results of these shows already. But, you know, I don't think that the majority of those 1.4 million people that have been watching Impact necessarily know that it's going to happen on next week's show. So I just didn't see the need to come right out and tell them, yes, it's going to happen. Yes, this show was taped many, many, many weeks ago. But again, that's just my personal preference. I would have teased it, but just get people hyped up for it without giving away the outcome. It should do a big number regardless. It better. They've been hyping this thing up now for 4 months. I see people asking if Spike TV won't air it or if they'll black it out because of the whole Ray Rice controversy that's been lording over the NFL. For those who don't know, Ray Rice is a football player who knocked out his then-girlfriend and got caught on camera dragging her out of an elevator. He's a scumbag. He got suspended for a whopping 2 games this upcoming season. And everyone's all up in arms about it. And you know what? Yes, it's bad timing, but they've hyped the shit out of this thing for 4 months. 4 months they have hyped this up. On this very show, even, they aired this, okay? Spike didn't cut this out from the end of the show. They aired it because they wanted to tell people, you better watch next week, because this woman's going through a table. They blatantly teased it at the end of this week's show. Do you honestly think they're then not going to show it next week? Come on, people. I can't even believe this is even up for debate. I mean, you could argue whether it's tasteful or not. It doesn't matter. It's happening. She's going through a fucking table. They didn't tape it and build this thing up not to air it. So, for those of you who may be worried about it, if you've been waiting with bated breath to see Dixie put through a table, as I'm sure many of you have, I wouldn't worry too much. It will air on TV next week. That will be her blow-off. And I was going to say, you know, oh, it's great. Now Dixie will be off TV. TNA may be off TV altogether. We don't know yet. So, who's to say how that's going to shake out? But if they do continue on Spike, if they do end up on a different network, I don't care where they end up. I don't care if they end up on the fucking Home Shopping Network. I don't care if they end up on the Weather Channel and James Storm gets a big push and they bring in Typhoon and Hurricane Helms and all this other shit. I don't care. Wherever they end up, if they survive, Dixie Carter cannot be on television anymore. This has to be it for her. This is the blow-off. She's done. She's finished. Go sit in the back and that's it. They've been building this for so long, and this woman has been on this show, eating up television time. She's no good. I know she's got some heat, but she's no good. She has no business being on the show. This needs to be it. This needs to be the blow-off. And if they're lucky, and they haven't used up their 9 lives yet, and they got one more life left to live, and they get renewed or they end up somewhere else, they need to feature their own performers, not WWE rejects, not grandmothers who have no business being in the ring. That's what TNA needs to do. Man, that got me all fired up now. I'll be at the tapings on Tuesday night. Man, I'm all fired up now. Tuesday night, August 5th, I'll be there with Brian Blade and Webmaster Mike on Tuesday. That's the Hardcore Justice show that they're taping. They have the Stairway to Janus match with Abyss and Bram. Samoa Joe and Low Ki, they've announced that match one-on-one. That's going to be big. Tajiri is going to be there all 3 nights, the Japanese buzzsaw, so who knows who he'll be wrestling, but he'll be in action. So I'm looking forward to that. Hopefully it doesn't turn out to be the last TNA show I ever attend. Let's get to the mailbag here, which is probably going to be somewhat abbreviated. I have far too many questions and just not enough time with all the news that broke this week. So next week, hopefully we'll get back to a bigger mailbag, and maybe one of these weeks I'll do another mailbag extra on or mailbag inbox or whatever the fuck I'm calling it. I'm still all fired up from that rant there at the end of the TNA review. Get me so crazy, these people. Anyway, email me your question to thesolemnmonster@gmail.com. You can send in MP3 audio questions as well as an attachment. Try to keep them to 30 seconds or so, and always include your name and where you are from. Incubus has some thoughts for us about Triple H.
Hey, Solemn Monster, Incubus here. So how about that Triple H promo after Battleground, huh? He's shooting, and then he dropped a pipe bomb, man. He goes, me and my friend Mark are going to stop watching. You get it? You get it? Because we're all a bunch of marks. Genius! It was like after the Rumble when he was going all, did someone not get what they wanted? Oh my god! No, but seriously, I have an idea for payback. Hear me out. How about we just not subscribe to the WWE Network, and then come Thursday evening, let's see just how smug and snarky the cerebral dysfunction is.
Incubus not happy with Triple H's remarks about the internet fan. I don't know. I thought it was funny, but I think he does make a good point. You know, it's all part of the entertainment and everything, but when they include comments like that in the show, they clearly hit a little too close to home. I'm sure that's how a lot of them really do feel behind the scenes. And it's just funny to me because fans like you and I are the kind of fans that they are relying on to help get this network going. And without the diehards and the hardest of the hardcores, where would they be right now? They would be in a far worse position than they are in. We have an audio question here next from Adam Cervantes.
Hey, Solid Monster. I purchased a WWE live event ticket for August 24th in Fresno, California at the Save Mart Center. And the projected main event is John Cena versus Kane, and which is after SummerSlam. I just wanted to know your take on if Cena might actually go over on Brock Lesnar and who would be Cena's next opponent after that.
I wouldn't put much stock in what the house show lineups say or any event lineups say 2, 3, 4 months down the road. I mean, they put that stuff out early. It always changes. Could Cena beat Brock? Sure, absolutely. It's not a slam dunk guarantee that Brock's going to win. I think there's actually a decent chance that Cena ends up going over. I think the world would implode if that happened. I think it would be one of the dumbest booking decisions in the history of that company if Brock just gets beat by Cena after breaking the streak at WrestleMania. So I don't think Cena is going to win. But let's say he does. You know, who would his next opponent be? His next opponent would be Brock. Because Brock's sticking around for Night of Champions. I figure either way, whoever the champion is, there's going to be a rematch. If Brock wasn't around, it gets scary. Because when you think about who realistically they could put in there with John Cena, you know, you look at a guy like Cesaro, right? They could have built him up into something. They've done nothing with him. Maybe they could salvage him and they can build him back up as a babyface 6 months from now. But he's not anywhere close to being able to contend for a championship right now. So you can put him on the side. All the members of the Shield actually don't make sense. Roman Reigns is a babyface. You're not going to go to Cena versus Reigns right now. You can do Rollins, but if you look at the explanation on Monday night why Triple H wouldn't give Orton a title shot, it was because Roman Reigns is always going to be around to screw it up for him, right? Well, same thing with Dean Ambrose. Why would he give a title shot to Seth Rollins, who already has a briefcase anyway, if if Dean Ambrose is always going to be right there to screw things up for him? So you could take all three Shield guys and put them on the side too. Who does that leave? Who does that leave? Bray Wyatt? Kane? Randy Orton? Oh, that's great. Yeah, those are some great options right there. I wouldn't mind Bray Wyatt so much, but, you know, Cena didn't exactly do much for him coming out of that feud. Just feuding with Cena didn't do wonders for Bray Wyatt. And I imagine that he and Chris Jericho are still going to be all tied up doing something. You don't have very many options, right? It gets pretty scary at the top. So it almost has to be Brock no matter what. And we have one more audio question here from Nate in Hutchinson, Minnesota.
Hello, Solid Monster. It's Nate from Hutchinson, Minnesota. My question today is in regards to tag teams. The WrestleMania 17 Triple Threat Tag Team match featured three teams, the Dudley Boys, the Hardy Boys, and Edge and Christian. This is a perfect example of teams having one mid-carder and one main eventer, one person that won world titles and one person that won only mid-card titles. Is it possible that both people from one tag team, can become main eventers? And if so, where are some notable ones in history?
Sure, it's possible. I mean, it doesn't happen very often. If you look at some of the biggest tag teams in history, okay, you look at LOD, Demolition, Hart Foundation, British Bulldogs, Steiner Brothers, Harlem Heat, it usually was only one member of that team that either became a world champion. I guess Davey Boy Smith never became a world champion, but one became something big, if not a champion. The other one just really never made it to that level. The Rockers, I guess, would be another one. But, you know, it has happened before. I would say Edge and Christian. You mentioned them. You know, Christian, I guess, was never really at the same level or seen at the same level as Edge, at least not in WWE's eyes. Edge held, you know, 11 different world titles, world, WWE. Christian did have two world heavyweight titles, okay? He was in the main SmackDown feud with Randy Orton for a good part of 2011. That has to count for something. So I'd say Edge and Christian kind of come close to fitting that criteria, but I would say the Hollywood Blondes would be another one. You know, they put Steve Austin and Brian Pillman together, and Austin went on to become multiple-time world champion. Pillman never became world champion, but he did kind of get to that main event level, and I think had he not gotten injured, I think that Austin and Pillman both would have been headlining WWE events for the championship. I think during the Attitude Era, maybe it would have been his first feud, or maybe it wouldn't have been his first feud coming out of that title win at WrestleMania 14. But if Pillman stayed healthy, and if Pillman stayed in WWE, because there was a lot of talk that Pillman was on his way out. Pillman actually wanted to leave WWE, even as that whole Hart Foundation U.S. versus Canada stuff was going on. He wanted to go back to WCW. Maybe he felt more comfortable there, and then he died, so he never had that chance. So who knows, even if he was healthy, if he would have stuck around. But I really think that had he stayed healthy and not been in that car wreck, we would have been seeing championship main events between Steve Austin and Brian Pillman. So I'd at least consider them. And then there's The Shield. And I don't know which way you fall on this. I guess different people will feel differently about this. But they did have Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins together for a while as a tag team representing The Shield. They became tag team champions. Roman Reigns, I think it's not even a question that before all is said and done, he'll be a multiple-time WWE champion. Seth Rollins, he's got the briefcase right now. He can cash in at any point and win the championship. And even if he cashes in and he loses, I still think at some point we'll see Seth Rollins as a world champion. I do. So would you consider The Shield to fit that criteria? I would. I mean, they were a tag team, right? They were a unit. I think all three of those guys at some point are going to be world champions. Thomas from London, England. I have a question for you regarding age in wrestling. WWE and TNA both bring back a lot of old stars who were in their late 30s, early to mid-40s, like Chris Jericho, Batista, Rob Van Dam, the Hardys, and the ECW guys in TNA right now. While in some cases this is fine, with Jericho putting over the younger guys and Tommy Dreamer acting as a good nostalgia act, do you think too many of these past stars are being brought back, or do you think more should be brought back? It seems to be happening a lot these days, and sometimes I find it slightly annoying when I turn on my TV and I see Tommy Dreamer, age 43, Rhino, age 38, involved in a main event feud with Bully Ray, age 43, when the TV time could be used to promote and get over younger talent. In a time when wrestling is lacking in the major stars department more than ever, I feel many wrestling companies should be doing more to put themselves in a position where they don't have to rely so much on bringing their old wrestlers back so frequently. Well, you kind of contradicted yourself there in a way, because you mentioned at a time that wrestling has as little star power as it has ever had, which is true, that's part of the reason I think why they're bringing these guys back, why they want Batista to come back. They want Brock to stick around. They want Jericho to come back, because they want those stars. They need the star power in their mind, and they've done such a poor job of building up enough younger stars. They built up some, but not enough, so they have to keep going back to the well with the old guys. That's why they do it. So do I think they should do it more often? No, I don't think bringing back more old guys is the answer. But, you know, the way that they're being used right now, like the ECW guys, for example, in TNA, I said earlier, I'm so sick and tired of the ECW nostalgia, but I know why they did it. They did it for the New York City tapings, and they're doing it again. You know, they're bringing Tajiri in. Like, it's going to continue with this next batch of tapings. So what you're going to get over the next 2 months of TNA television, if they survive that long, it's going to be ECW, ECW, ECW. The hope, though, is that when they get out of New York, if they soldier on, they'll leave the ECW nostalgia behind. Hopefully it's just a temporary thing, okay? In WWE, they bring back Chris Jericho, they have him work with Bray Wyatt. I don't have a problem with that. Because in the end, Bray Wyatt's going to go over. He and Jericho will hopefully have better matches than the one they had at Battleground. Jericho can still go. You know, yeah, he's older, but he hasn't missed very many steps. So I don't have a problem with that as much. I don't feel like WWE is bringing back a whole ton of old guys. You know, Batista now is gone for the time being. They brought Hogan back, but Hogan doesn't wrestle. Flair, he doesn't wrestle. Sting, I want to talk about this. I'm kind of glad that I used your question. You brought this whole subject of age up. Because I made a comment on Twitter the other day about AJ Styles. I said, you know, for as much as AJ Styles is tearing it up right now in New Japan, I mean, he is kicking ass. AJ Styles is having some of the best matches of his career, and he's 37 years old. Okay, he's not as young as he used to be. He's not flying around as much as he used to. In a lot of ways, though, he's a better wrestler now than he was then. He's at his peak. He's in peak form right now. The matches he's having over in that G1 are just, from the ones I've seen two of them, but I keep reading reports night after night after night. he's just having the best matches on the show. And that's against some of the best talent in the world right now over in Japan. So I read that and I see these matches and I just think, God, WWE passed on this guy. AJ did a bunch of interviews, and when they asked him about WWE, he wasn't against it. You could tell he wanted it. Like, he would have loved to have been able to get a phone call from them, to reach a deal. He would have gladly gone to NXT. You know, he has said this in interviews. So it's not that he didn't want to go or it was his choice not to go. They just didn't have any interest in him. He never got that phone call. And it makes me shake my head. And people, you know, wrote in when I said I don't understand it. And they said, well, he's 37 years old. He's too old. Why would they invest in somebody who's 37? And I just think that is such bullshit. That is such a bullshit answer. I'm not saying that that doesn't factor into their decision. I just think that logic is such trash. Because here's the thing. You can't have a one-size-fits-all rule for all these guys. I know the way things are done now, they have NXT. They have developmental. They're focused on youth. They're focused on the future. It's a lot easier for them to take a guy who's 27 years old, who hasn't worked all over the world and in other promotions, and just teach them your way. Teach them the WWE style. Break them into your system. And you know that if they could stay injury-free, the guy's 27 years old, he could have another 12, 15, 20 years in his career. You could really put the machine behind him, okay? I understand that. But think of the way it used to be during the Monday Night Wars, okay? There were no developmental territories back then. WWE wasn't partnered with OVW. I guess WCW had the power plant, but that wasn't a developmental league, okay? That wasn't the same thing. You had this competition between these two companies raging on, and guys were constantly jumping back and forth. They were jumping ship. They were going from Raw to Nitro, from Nitro to Raw, and there was a guy by the name of Chris Jericho, who I just mentioned. And Jericho wasn't, he was never a main event guy in WCW. He probably should have been, but he never was. He was never going to have that chance. But he got popular enough to where people liked him, they knew him, they saw the talent in him, and he could see that he was going nowhere, and he went to WWE. And that very first night he made his debut on Raw, it was about 2 months after he signed his contract. Maybe not even 2 months, okay? They didn't keep him out very long. They had the Millennium Countdowns. They hyped him up and hyped him up and hyped him up. And when he made his first appearance, all they did was flash his name on the Titantron, and an entire building of people, 15,000 people, went nuts. You have to think that a lot of those people have never seen Chris Jericho before. I mean, a lot of them did. There were, you know, Jericho signs. Like, clearly people knew who he was. But I don't know. Do you think the majority of those 15,000 people knew who Chris Jericho was? I'm willing to bet they didn't. But he got this monstrous reaction. And it was another shot fired by WWE, who was already kicking WCW's ass at that point. But they knew they had a talented guy in Jericho. They're not going to hold him on the sidelines. They didn't have an NXT to send him to. He went right to the main roster. He made a big splash. It got people really excited because a lot of people did know who he was. And I know he had a tough time kind of assimilating himself, but that was more politics than anything else, and people, I think, who were just jealous of him and who were worried for their spot. He talks in his book about the issues he had with Triple H, although you hear enough stories where Triple H, it sounds like he was jealous of everybody at that time. But that's politics. That's something else. He didn't have a problem going on Raw and going on the pay-per-views and wrestling people and his style clashing with theirs, and he had great matches, and he became a big part of that roster. AJ Styles kind of fits the same bill. AJ Styles was a main event guy in TNA. In WWE, that doesn't mean anything. So if they bring in AJ Styles to work, let's say, at a mid-card level at first, that's fine. I mean, I would have no problem with that. I would almost expect them to. I wouldn't expect AJ Styles to come in and go right into a feud with John Cena or Randy Orton. That would be the end game. You would build him up so that he can be in the main event. He can finally, you know, John Cena will have a new opponent, and Randy Orton will have somebody new to work with. He can work with Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, and maybe they even do something with AJ and Triple H. You know, there's a million different things that they could do. There's a million different opponents he could have. He's a big enough star where he's got a name, he's got a profile for himself, and right now, even at 37, I don't know about you, but it looks like to me he's in the prime of his career. He's having the best matches of his career. He's going out there. He's kicking ass. You know, he doesn't look like he's 37 years old. You never know when his body's going to break down. So this whole notion that, well, he's too old. He's too old. He's fucking awesome. And when you have a guy who's fucking awesome, you take advantage of that. What is with this one-size-fits-all? Well, we have a policy now. We're not going to take guys who are over the age of 32. Or we have this policy where, you know, unless your name is Sting and you're 56 years old and we're just bringing you in for, you know, a one-time gig, anybody else, you've got to go down to NXT and you've got to hone your craft and you've got to be down there for a minimum of 3 months. What is this shit? Why does there have to be a rule for every single person? Why can't a guy like AJ Styles become available? And look, a guy like AJ Styles does not just fall out of the sky into your lap, okay? He still had 11 years or whatever of exposure on major cable television. You know what he's capable of. He's willing to come in and learn and work. And you let a guy like that go. Why? Because he's too old? Because he's too small? I don't know about small. You know, Daniel Bryan and CM Punk seem like they did very well for themselves. They signed Kenta. They signed Devitt. They're not exactly giants. So it must have something to do with the age issue. And it just pisses me off because you can't have this one-size-fits-all rule for everybody. AJ Styles should be the exception. A guy like him doesn't just become available like that. So if that's what was holding him back, and I don't know if it was, but people were saying that to me. It just pissed me the hell off. Like, who gives a shit if he's 37 years old? The guy's fucking great. He's not showing any signs of slowing down anytime soon. Now's the time to pick him up, strictly for that reason. Because 10 years from now, he may not be able to have these matches anymore. You can't think about 10 years down the road with a guy like AJ Styles. That's what guys like Tyler Breeze and Adrian Neville are for. Okay, those are the guys you want to invest in and you expect them to be around 10 years from now. AJ is a guy that you bring in and you use him now because you need bodies. You need stars. So to let a guy like that go and now to see what he's doing in Japan, I mean, it's cool to see, but it's a real failure on the part of WWE. Jim Ross interviewed AJ Styles on his podcast a few weeks ago and he said one of his biggest missteps was not signing the guy. It doesn't matter that he's 37 years old. You can still go after the guy. This one-size-fits-all bullshit is so stupid to me. I mean, if you had the same mentality back 15, 20 years ago during the Monday Night Wars, boy, let me tell you, that time period in wrestling wouldn't have been nearly as much fun as it was. Carlos from Houston, Texas, since SummerSlam is around the corner, what are your top five SummerSlams? I kind of jotted this down before when I plucked your question out. I would say in no real order, 1989, 1991, 1993, 2002, and last year, 2013. Ross wants to know, did you ever go to WWF New York, and if so, what was it like? I did go to WWF New York multiple times, actually. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. You know, the way it worked is, when you walked in, at least on the upper level, which was ground level, so what happened is you walk in, they had a huge merchandise store. They had wrestler theme music playing. Okay, so that's what you were listening to in the background. Then when you were ready to go into the restaurant or the club, there were escalators that took you downstairs. So it was like basement level. And it was very spacious. They had a stage, so they could have concerts on that stage. And then they had tables, and you just sat down, and they served food. You know, it was all American food. I actually thought that WWF New York had a pretty badass burger. I thought as far as burgers go, theirs was pretty good. I was there for, I think, one of the Sunday Night Heat tapings. They had this DJ, I forgot his name, DJ something, and this woman, Rebecca, maybe, from some soap opera. They were the hosts. It was fun. You know, they had some musical acts performing there on occasion, but I was really only there for the Heat taping and then another time to eat. And then browsing the merchandise store upstairs. But, you can't have a place like that in Times Square. And if you're not doing enough business, you can't maintain it. I mean, I can't even imagine what the rent on that property had to be. Let's just put it this way. I was not surprised when they unloaded that property because the rent is just astronomical. I mean, you talk about the worst place in the world in terms of rent. It's got to be right there, right? Times Square, New York City. As it is, New York City is probably the worst place in the world in terms of the cost of living. Take it from me, I know. And finally, Philip from Kerrville, Texas. I was watching Saturday night's main event on the network. The episode I was watching was the one where we first saw the Mega Powers come together. It was pretty funny to watch. At the end of the show, they played the Pile Driver music video. Now, I know The song Pile Driver was used by Coco Beware, but I never saw the music video, and it was one of the funniest things I've ever watched. Have you seen the video, and has WWE done any other music videos like this? I think they did music videos for Land of a Thousand Dances and some of those other songs from the wrestling album, or the Pile Driver album. I grew up a child of that rock and wrestling era, so of course I saw the video. It was so cheesy, that's really what made it great. But you've got to see the video for Jive Soul Bro with the Slickster. That's my favorite video that they've done of all time. The Coliseum video that I first saw that on had Slick sitting in a fast food joint eating fried chicken out of a bucket. The most racist thing you've ever seen, but that's just how it was back then. I mean, you know, if they were going to offend you, at least they went all the way with it. They didn't half-ass it. They had Akeem out there, this giant 450-pound white dude, dancing around in blue spandex with a picture of Africa on his back. Dancing horribly. I mean, you just would never see characters like that today. I mean, instead we get CJ Parker, the eco-douche, on NXT. It's just, it's not the same. So that's the mailbag. Keep sending me questions. TheSolemonster@gmail.com. This week's sad tweet comes from @SmithHart1. The oldest sibling in the Hart family. Some might say the black sheep. I think I've heard him referred to as that before. Smith Hart. Smith Hart piled on the Vince Russo hate during the week. Vince Russo was getting a lot of very hateful messages and tweets from people. And Smith Hart decided that he was going to get in on it. And on Monday night, this was during Raw, he sent this series of tweets to Vince Russo. He said, "Congratulations at Pyro Ballyhoo. Not only did you murder my brother, but you've successfully killed two wrestling promotions. Since I've ruffled a few feathers, I'd like to make it clear. I'd like to challenge Russo to a fight at Bound for Glory, with the proceeds going to Owens Foundation. If nothing else good can come from the destruction of TNA and the loss of jobs, perhaps raising money for a worthy cause would be." Now, I'm not one to necessarily disagree with his comments about Vince Russo having a hand in the destruction of two wrestling companies. I think we could all agree that there is some truth to that. Accusing him, though, of being a murderer, that's taking it a little too far. Now, I know it was his brother, so he feels very strongly about it. Who am I to say? But there's never been any evidence that Vince Russo had any sort of direct involvement in Owen Hart's death and forcing him to do the stunt. I mean, there's a lot of stories that have come out that don't paint WWE in a very positive light. At the end of the day, that rests on Vince McMahon. He calls the shots, not Vince Russo, not anybody else. You know, I think during the trial when it was either the trial when Martha sued them, or I think WWE may have sued the manufacturer of the harness and the pulley that released Owen and caused him to fall. I think it came out that what happened is WWE wanted him to do this stunt. Now, Owen had lowered from the ceiling before. He had done it at least a couple of times on TV. It's not like he never did it before, even though apparently he was very nervous and didn't want to do it. And I think their idea was they wanted him to lower from the ceiling, but then it was planned that he would fall, but not obviously not from 80 feet up. He would lower to a safer distance, but then would kind of fumble around and would fall, and it would make it look like he was kind of a goof. I think that was the idea. I think this is what supposedly came out during one of these trials. And the company that they had been using to do the stunt previously said, no, we're not doing that. Screw that. I mean, that's not safe. We don't want to have anything to do with that. So instead of just abandoning the whole stunt, they said, well, fuck it. If you're not going to do it, we'll find a company that will. And I think they then found a company that they had never used before, and I think that was the issue. So it's a very kind of complicated mess of things. I think to say that you murdered my brother, I think, is just way out of line. And God knows I've said a lot of shit even on this show here today about Vince Russo, but I wouldn't go so far as to call him a murderer. And then to make it worse, you know, to go ahead and then follow up on that by tweeting, well, I'd like to wrestle Vince Russo in a match. at Bound for Glory. It's such a desperate attempt for attention. It's almost pathetic is what it is. And that's what makes it this week's sad tweet. You know, it's one thing, again, to accuse the guy of murder and then to follow up by saying, hey, I want to wrestle you at a TNA pay-per-view, and oh, it'll be for charity, of course. It's like, it's such a see-through cry for attention is what it is. It's pathetic. So that's this week's sad tweet. And before we wrap up here, I did say that I auditioned for a game show earlier this week. I had a fun time. I was picked to audition for Wheel of Fortune, which is probably the most famous game show still going. I guess that and Jeopardy would be. They were bringing auditions here locally, and you know, one thing led to another, and they picked me. So I had to go down on Wednesday. They had it at the Sheraton Hotel. And it was me and about 75 other people sitting around, and I didn't know what to expect. I mean, I've never auditioned for a game show a day in my life. I mean, I watch on TV and I play along like everybody else does. So I thought, you know, what the hell? What could go wrong? What could possibly be so bad about trying out for the show? The worst thing that happens is you don't get picked. And what happened is they bring you into a ballroom, and they have... So again, we had about 75, maybe 80 people there. It wasn't a lot of people. It was invitation only. It wasn't open to the public, so I guess they kept it kind of tight. So they had a series of chairs on one side, a series of chairs on the other side, and they had in front a projector screen. They had somebody working a laptop, and they had an actual Wheel of Fortune board projected on there. They had a little fake cardboard wheel that a lady up there would spin when it was your turn. They would call your name out. You would stand up. You would rise from your seat. And you would say, you know, I want to spin, I want to buy a vowel. And we went through about 15 or 20 puzzles in the first round. Just everybody, we went around the horn, so everybody had a chance to stand up at least once. And it's funny to me, and I knew this going in, but just a word to the wise, if any of you should ever audition for Wheel of Fortune or another game show, just remember, they're not looking so much to see how many puzzles you can solve. Okay, it's great to solve puzzles and show how smart you are, but what they're really looking for is to see how you sound. How you look, how you act, are you nervous, do you project your voice, do you smile a lot? I can't tell you how many times the people up front would look at us, okay, when we would stand up, and we weren't smiling enough, and they would kind of grab their faces and go, oh, smile. Like, it actually got annoying after a while. And plus, I almost, you know, the skin on my hands was almost completely raw because of all the clapping that you have to do. I'd say the audition from start to finish probably went about 2.5 hours. So anyway, we go through this whole series of puzzles, and now it's my turn, right? They call me, and I'm ready to go. I mean, I've been playing this show since I was a kid. I've been watching it on TV. This is going to be great. I stand up and call out a letter, and it's on there. It's on the board. But then I realize, you know, I'm a little nervous. Not too nervous, but a little bit. But I'm not really paying attention. I'm only half paying attention to the puzzle that I see in front of me. And the puzzle is occupation. And they have a whole bunch of letters up there. It starts with CH, and it ends with TEA, and then there's a couple of letters missing, and there's an R. It's very obvious, okay? Stevie Wonder could see that this puzzle clearly is chemistry teacher. And as a fan of Breaking Bad, I'm actually kind of ashamed of myself that I didn't just blurt it out. But I'm looking at this board, and they're saying, okay, what do you want to do? Do you want to spin? Do you want to solve? Do you want to buy a vowel? And all I could do is, I spun, and I said, give me a B. And as soon as it came out of my mouth, I said, you fucking moron. But that just goes to show, like, when you're in that situation, it gets to you. It really does. It gets to you. And I realized right away that I fucked up, and I'm like, ah, of course it wasn't a B. Somebody else solved it. I mean, it didn't matter. The second time around, I solved the puzzle. I think it was Over the Rainbow or whatever it was. I got a hat. I got a spiffy Wheel of Fortune hat out of it if you want to go on Twitter and see it. But the second part is what I was most worried about. They give you a written test. So what they do is they have a pink test and a yellow test. So as they pass them around, you're not sitting next to people with the same test. So you can't look over and cheat. Not that I would do that, of course. So they give out these tests. They put a 5-minute countdown clock up on the screen. They say, solve as many of these as you can. There's 16 puzzles total. So for example, you may have 4 puzzles that are for the category thing. You may have 4 that are for the category showbiz. And again, every test is different depending on who you're sitting next to. You got 5 minutes to fill in as many of the empty missing letters as you can. And they don't give you a lot, okay? They really don't. There's a lot of missing letters on there. So I'm looking, I'm going through the first 3-4 puzzles. I'm like, I can't solve any of these. This is crazy. I go through the rest of them. I find one. I'm like, oh, okay, I know that one. I look up at the clock. I feel like I'm back in college taking midterms. I'm like, this sucks. So I look up. I got 90 seconds left. I have two puzzles solved. I'm like, I'm done. That's it. I'm finished. This is crazy. And finally, it comes to me, and I kind of relax a little bit more. I'm like, ah, okay, now I see it. And I'm like picking these things off. Now I'm finally getting all excited here, and I'm getting confident. And then sure enough, time runs out. So out of 16, I think I got 7. I would have gotten 9. I just didn't have the time to fill out the last two. And the way it works is they collect your written exams, and they send you out for about 10 minutes, and they're going to grade your exams, and they're going to combine that score with their impression of you from round one. And we are brought back in, you know, 10, 15 minutes later. They say, we thank you guys for coming. We can only hold on to a few of you. We want some of you to stay over to play one more time. The rest of you, have a nice day. And I would say they only kept, I mean, of the 80 people maybe that were there, they probably only kept 10 over. I was not one of them. But it's just weird. You never really know what they're looking for, because there were people there who were awesome. They had these great booming voices, and they were solving puzzles, and they had a great presence about them, but they didn't pick those people, and it didn't make any sense to me. So what I got from this is they're looking for people from all different backgrounds. They want people from different nationalities. They want not too many males, not too many females. They want some couples. If you're from a military family, they love that. They held somebody over who was part of a military family who really didn't do that well. But it was an interesting experiment, almost, just to observe and watch what they're looking for. I had a blast. I mean, like, that first round we were doing all those puzzles, I was having a blast. We were all having fun. And you felt like you were really sitting in the audience at a Wheel of Fortune taping. So it was a fun experience. If you ever are in that same scenario, whether it's for a different show or anything like that, the best advice I could offer to you now, having gone through this, is just don't be nervous. Have fun with it. And it's less about your puzzle-solving ability, and it has everything to do with your presence. In a lot of ways, it was almost like, I would imagine, trying out to be a wrestler, right? I can't imagine how many wrestlers have probably tried out who probably weren't that good, but they had a certain look, or they had a certain presence, or a certain smile, and that's how they got noticed. See, that's how I loop this back into wrestling discussion, since it is a wrestling podcast. I figured I got to loop it into wrestling somehow. And that's the closest comparison I can make to it. I would imagine in wrestling and probably auditioning for a lot of things in this life, it's very similar. It's more style over substance, unfortunately. That's just how the world works. So if you have questions for the mailbag, again, you can email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Oh, I forgot to mention the best part, by the way. So when we're done and I'm eliminated, I'm leaving. And in that little period where they sent us out to grade our exams, everyone's kind of standing around, they're nervous, they're mingling. I struck up a conversation with a cute girl from Long Island. And when I left, we ended up grabbing coffee together. And I don't even drink coffee. So even when I lose, I win. Follow me on Twitter, @Solemonster. We are now just around 6,200 followers and growing by the day. Facebook.com/TheSolemonster is my profile page. We also have a closed discussion group on Facebook, over 2,500 members strong. You have to apply for membership. I'm being very selective and cautious with who I let in. So if you've applied and you think that you should have already been approved, you don't know why you haven't, just drop me a message on there and let me know, and I'll see if I can go back and find your request and approve you. Otherwise, you just got to be patient. I go person by person, and I do some research on them before I approve them. It's a very thorough process, so it takes time. And we are on YouTube as well. You can subscribe to our channel on there. There is a recent Sound Off inbox that I did. I hope to do more of those in the future. It was a 75-minute bonus sound-off answering your questions, your mailbag questions. So there's lots of new content going up on that channel in the near future, and lots of content already up there. So please do check that out. Also, keep streaming the show as well on Stitcher Radio. That helps our ranking out. You can also subscribe to us in iTunes. We're on TuneIn Radio now. And you can always make a PayPal donation on thesolemonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. We have a whole roster of talent with all the names I've given out so far. And perhaps you'll be next to join our roster. We're not cutting costs on our roster. We're always welcoming new talent. no matter how old they may be. So until next week, we'll be back with episode 340. Wow, 340. Of the Sound Off. Have yourselves a good week. Do follow me, by the way. I should mention this as well. Not just on Twitter, at Solomonster, but we have an Instagram. I opened up an Instagram, or I should say it was already open. I started using it back in June when I went to the TNA tapings. I figured any spoilerish photos, I would just put them on Instagram and not on Twitter and piss people off. So I'll be posting stuff again from the TNA tapings on Tuesday night. Probably on both, but more so on Instagram. So it's Instagram, I think, .com/TheSolomonster is our official page. I would follow that account, and so any new photos and video clips I'm able to get up, that's where they'll be. So be sure to follow me there as well. So that's it. Until next time, be well, stay safe. We'll see you right back here next weekend for a brand new episode of The Sound Off. Take care, guys.
You've been listening to The Solomonster Sounds Off, giving you the good.
Solid into the cover of Natalya! Solid's the NXT Women's Champion!
The bad.
We officially strip Daniel Bryan of the WWE World Heavyweight Championship.
It's a good night to be right.
And the ugly.
I made the mistake of reading Vince Russo's blog. He talks about how it's not creative. No, it's the crowds that are dead, and it's all theme park visitors who come inside because it's too hot outside. 900 people did not wander into the fucking impact zone because grandma was about to keel over from heat stroke.
Well, mostly the good.
The Solomonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, on thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes.
Solo Monster Sound Off.